don't risk the disappointment of missing a great ACB radio program, join our announcements list today. Receive email about upcoming programs on all our channels and new features. To join, send a blank email now to announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
That's announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
Or visit our website. Announcements about ACB Radio delivered to you direct and free. Just another way to stay in touch with ACB Radio.
Do you have trouble distinguishing between a $20 and a $10 bill in dim light? Are you having difficulty reading the newspaper? If you answer yes, then the American Council of the Blind can help you. We are blind and visually impaired people from every walk of life who work together to enhance our lives. For more information, call 800-424-8666 or contact us online at www.acb.org. The American Council of the Blind, forging new frontiers for our future.
ACB Radio appreciates the generous support of the Seeing Eye, the nation's oldest dog guide school. Let the Seeing Eye put the harness of independence in your hand. Visit our website, www.seeingeye.org.
From one of the ballrooms at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, I'm Jonathan Mosen, welcoming you to day three of our general session convention coverage of the 42nd annual convention of the American Council of the Blind. It's nice to have you along with us. We've got an interesting day ahead of us today. You can get in touch with us. We'll have the MSN Messenger running in just a moment, and you can also email us. In either case, the address is convention@acbradio.org. That's convention@acbradio.org, and we always enjoy getting your feedback. According to my program, it's Tuesday, July the 8th today. That's a useful thing to have because I find that there is so much to do that generally it all becomes a bit of a blur, especially when you don't seem to get an awful amount of sleep. So let's tell you what we have in store today. It's Education Day today. It's sponsored by the Bank of America. The entertainment that you can hear in the background and which you'll be able to hear without my interruption shortly comes from Keith Stiebler. He is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, right here. At 8:30, President Chris Gray will call the convention to order, and we will hear the invocation that comes today from Rabbi Steve Spindell of Beth Shalom Temple here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There'll be some ACB business, and I would imagine that given that the nominating committee met last night, there will be a report from the nominating committee. And there may well be some constitution and bylaws stuff. Who knows? We may get to a resolution or two. I understand resolutions are pretty busy this year, so that'll be ACB business to take us through to approximately 9:05. At which time President Gray will hand over the chairing of the session to M.J. Schmidt, the second Vice President of the American Council of the Blind, a founder member of the organization back in 1961. She will give a report on the last year as she perceives it and some of the activities that she has been involved with. At around about 9:15, we have a panel discussion on modern challenges educating blind children. That is moderated by Jay Dardner, who is, of course, the president of the Pennsylvania Council of the Blind and one of our sound people here. The panel will include Dr. Janet Simon, Director of the Western Pennsylvania School for the Blind, and Dr. Bernadette Kappen, who's the Director of Overbrook School for the Blind. Also Susan LaVenture, National Association for Parents of Children with Visual Impairments. That's going to be a fairly lengthy discussion. It takes us till around 10 o'clock. When we talk about idea reauthorization with Mark Richard, who's the Executive Director of the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind, he's of Silver Springs, Maryland. We'll take a break at 10:15, at which time we'll tell you a little bit more about who's exhibiting here and what they're exhibiting, and answer any questions or share any comments that you may have sent through to us during the preceding part of the program. We're back in business at 10:30, and staying with the education theme, we look at ACB scholarships. Presentations will be made of scholarships today. Patty Slaby's in charge of that at River Falls, Wisconsin. There's an increasing number of scholarships that ACB awards to assist people, and it's always really inspiring to hear those young people studying, what their ambitions are, and the very interesting fields in which they're pursuing academic attainment. So that's the scholarships this morning. After that, we discuss transition from education to employment. That's at around about 11:30. And talking with us about that is Robert Carter. Dr. Carter is of College Station, Texas. At 11:50, there'll be some announcements and closings, and we recess at around about 12 o'clock. Let's take a look at some emails and messages that we've received. We've had a couple of inquiries about the Friends in Arts Showcase of the Performing Arts. We've tried to bring that to you for the last 3 years. We can't bring it to you this evening. There have been some questions about that. Are we doing FIA? We'd love to, and FIA would love us to. They were quite happy. But because of where it is this time, it's not in the same room that the convention sessions are in, and that means that we do not have the facilities to stream it from there. We do, however, hope to bring you coverage of the gala night for the book, People of Vision, the Candidates Forum, and the banquet, none of which are happening here, but we hope to be able to uplift the PC from the exhibit hall when exhibits are over tomorrow and Interactive is finished with it, and relocate it to the Western where some of these events are taking place. So we will keep you informed via these broadcasts and also via the ACB radio lists. Also, we're saying hi to Bud Keith, a regular ACB radio listener and, of course, a great member of ACB. Nice to hear from you, Bud, and glad to hear that things are coming in loud and clear. What's really interesting is that with every morning that goes by, it seems to me, having done these for 4 years now, that the convention ballroom takes longer and longer to fill up. It's virtually empty in here, as you can hear, just a few people doing some adjustments with sound and that kind of stuff. So I guess people are starting to feel it now. There are so many mixes and functions going on, and of course meetings into the night. The Resolutions Committee is meeting extremely long hours. They always do, but it seems that there are quite a few resolutions going through this year to the committee. And I think you'll find that as the week progresses, there's an awful amount of ACB business is going to need to be conducted this year. Let's see. Bill Minicki. I hope I haven't mangled your name, Bill. He says that he was very interested in the transportation discussions yesterday, and that where he is in Virginia Beach, there are no such things, and in fact things are going the other way. They want to cut back on transportation, so he was rather inspired by some of the comments that were made about transportation yesterday, and obviously there's a lot of advocacy around the US that's needed in this area. So thanks for your contribution, Bill. Also saying good morning to Bonnie Thompson. Bonnie is in Mississippi, and she says she's really enjoying listening to the convention. She claims it's better than being there because she's sitting in a rocking chair and munching away on popcorn. And so she says she appreciates the coverage from ACB Radio. So thank you very much for that, Bonnie. We're glad to have you tuned in, and certainly glad that it's all working.
Yeah, go ahead, Keith.
Bob Lyons of Vienna, West Virginia. Nice to hear from you, Bob. And Bob says he's not a member of any organization, but he's enjoying the coverage of this ACB convention. And I think that's one of the purposes that I've been most pleased that ACB Radio has been able to serve, is that it's a very public way of letting anyone who's interested hear how the American Council of the Blind conducts its business, and its warts and all, conducted in a way that everyone around the world who is interested can hear. So I'm glad you're finding it of interest, Bob. And thank you for your call, for your email. Now, we say hi to an old friend, Dan Kaiser, in California, doing governmental affairs things with the California Council of the Blind, and that is preventing him from attending. But Dan and Anne are listening, and thank you for your positive comments, Dan, and also for your best wishes for me personally. I really appreciate that. And Dan, of course, did the Dan Kaiser Show long before ACB Radio, but he did bring the Dan Kaiser Show to ACB Radio for a while there, before life got really hectic. And that was one of the original ACB Radio programs when we began in December of 1999. So it's terrific to hear from you, Dan. Just while we do have some time, a bit of a program note in advance that I certainly would invite you to join in my on-air farewell party that we're going to be holding on ACB Radio Interactive on Friday week in the US time, 8 Eastern and 5 Pacific in the evening. That's Saturday, 0 Universal time, Friday nights, the 18th of July at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific over on ACB Radio Interactive. And we're going to have about 4 hours of a bit of fun and reminiscing and great music and your email. And it's intended to be a celebration, not a wake, so do join us for some fun, 4 hours, on my last ACB radio program. Well, it's now 14 minutes past 8, and I think at this point we will patch you through to the entertainment so that you can hear the groovy piano playing that is going on, and I can even tell you if I get organized enough. Ah, there we go. It's Keith Stiebel, of course, as I mentioned earlier, from Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. And we'll leave you with the entertainment from Keith and remind you that you can get in touch at convention@acbradio.org. I'm not sure whether the book courier is.
Well, what I'll do is mention, ask that question to Fred and make sure when he does the demonstration that he addresses that.
Right. Do you know what? This is great live radio. I just realized that because I didn't flick a little switch, right. we've been doing dead air here, so I'm going to have it's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
We have been talking to nobody here. We've been talking to Tuck Tinsley from the American Printing House of the Blind, and I apologize to everybody for the dead air. How bad is that? But I was just saying, Tuck, that there's so much going on with the American Printing House, and we talked about the fact that there's a range of products, electronic products. Larry Scootcon's doing a wonderful job of that. And what we really want to emphasize, now that I pushed the right button, is the book port that you guys are showing off. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the book port plays MP3, recordings, it plays e-text, and it's also set up for Daisy NISO in addition to digital talking books.
Right.
Fred Gassoni will be demonstrating that probably in a half an hour in the convention, and for 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll explain the differences between Bookport and the courier and so forth.
Right. That's an exciting, and it's a tiny device too.
Oh, it's a little bit bigger than a package of cigarettes.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, Jonathan, earlier, the big move for us was bringing Larry Scootcon back to Louisville and then letting Larry bring in programmers. We currently have 5 blind programmers in our technical research area. They do a great job.
I think that really counts for something, doesn't it? Because when you have blind people who are really directing things and know what's needed, you get some great products. And I've just been so impressed with the studio recorder that you guys have done.
Well, without question. And you know they're accessible immediately, right? They'd have to be accessible for them to develop them. So we're just really pleased with our...
And I hear, you know, that there are people in talking book studios around the world now who are really taking to the studio recorder because it's like working in an analog environment but with all the benefits of digital.
Well, our studio, Larry originally designed it when NLS indicated we needed to switch over to digital, our studios to digital recordings, designed it for our studios, and they love it. And so it was designed for the user, and had a lot of input, and our studios use it, and there's nothing better out there as far as we're concerned.
Very good. Do you happen to know how much the book port is selling for?
Under 400, and that's what's nice about APH products is a lot of the development's underwritten with federal funds, therefore that doesn't go into the cost of the product when we sell it to the end user. So many technology things, they try to recapture the development costs, and we're fortunate not to have to do that.
That's a very good price for something that plays all of that stuff, especially the Daisy material. As more and more people go digital with their recording, I think that's going to be significant.
For sure. We're really pleased. On 2 AA batteries, we're getting over 60 hours on 2 AA. So it's really, we say, you know, give you 60, but it could give up to 100 hours on 2 AA's.
Now
and it holds, you get 1,740 books on a disc when you get it, and you can download over 200 titles into it. So it's just an amazing tool.
Well, if you can make it play audible books as well, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Well, it plays recorded talking books, and you can record into it.
Right.
Fred will demonstrate that.
Very good. Are you tapping me on the shoulder for a reason, Jay?
No, that's me.
Oh, so it was Jay trying to check my attention.
Hands on Kentucky.
Good on you. Right, and you made us so welcome in Louisville, you know. I learned how to say it, too.
Louisville, you said it.
Louisville, yeah. Tuck, I really appreciate your time, and it always hurts when you press the right buttons. And good luck with the book port. I think it's a marvelous product.
And you do such wonderful work.
Well, thank you. All the best. Okay, bye-bye. There you go. That's Tuck Tinsley, who stopped by the booth, and he's from the American Printing House for the Blind, and some very interesting stuff happening there. All right, it is now 20 minutes past 8. We'll certainly stop people who we find that are worthy of talking with, and it will certainly help if I make sure I press the right buttons. We'll go back to the entertainment in just a moment when it resumes. I think it is now. Let's do that. No, it's coming from Keith Stubler. And Mike and Jay having fun over there.
Hooking up Fred's gadget.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. Keith Stubler is the entertainer from Pittsburgh.
Yes, please.
If Ray Campbell or Jeff Tom are in the room, would they please come to the podium? Thank you. All right, great. Thank you.
People are still coming in. You want to do it?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's have a big applause for our entertainer this morning, Keith Stabler of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Great job, Keith. Thank you very much. We'll now come to order. I know people are still coming in, and we have our never-ending difficulties with the elevators, but I know that you're trying to get here, and people will be coming in for a little bit, so we may have a little bit of extra noise going on. But ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call us to order now for our Tuesday morning session of the plenary session of the American Council of the Blind. To begin this morning, I would like to introduce Rabbi Steve Spindell of the Beth Shalom Temple of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for this morning's invocation. Rabbi Spindell.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning.
In our tradition, upon any special moment, once in a lifetime, or at most once in a year's cycle of events, we recite the benediction Baruch Shehechiyanu Vekiyamanu Vehigiyanu Lazman Hazeh, praising God as Master of the Universe, who has kept us alive, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this day. I say this blessing today on your behalf and on my own behalf, welcoming you to this plenary session and to Pittsburgh, and for my first visit to this new convention center. And I've already discovered some of what you've been learning about these past few days. A building can have multiple disabilities. But on your behalf and on behalf of all of Pittsburgh that looks forward to this building being here for a few years to come, we hope that we will see not disabilities, but different abilities. We hope we will develop a tolerance for the strengths as well as an understanding for the shortcomings. And what's true in architecture is all the more true in the art of life. I pray that your gathering give each of you strength and resolve. I pray that it bring to our city an appreciation for your strengths, and that it bring to all of us a new and perhaps approaching divine understanding that shortcomings are part of what it means to be human, but all of us are created in the divine image. May you enjoy today's session, your visit to Pittsburgh, and your memories of this convention center. Amen.
Amen. Rabbi, thank you very
much.
God
bless. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Spindell. I will now turn the microphone over this morning to Cynthia Towers to make a few announcements. Cynthia.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. I'm ready to go home already. I've been here since the 29th, so I'm ready to go home. Good morning. Welcome to the second day of our business session. Just a couple of things. We have been having some the communication center where the newspaper comes out has been having some difficulties with the Braille version. So we at the convention office are making the decision not to put the print out until the Braille is ready. Therefore, and the other monkey wrench in that is that when the Braille comes out, there are some people that have subscribed to have the paper delivered, so they're going to try to take care of those first. There are some caucus announcements and things which I will go. What is that? It's a forklift. Okay. there are. It might come through here. We don't know. Okay. There are some. What I'll do is I'll go get the paper, and I will mention the caucuses for today. None will be happening before noon, so that will be helpful. And I'll peruse through there to see if there's any meeting room changes that you'll need to know about before the session breaks up today. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to talk to you about one thing internally, just kind of amongst us. Melinda Burnett from the Birmingham Sheraton will be here later today. She'll be spending 2 days with us to get a feel for how we do our operations for next year. But I wanted to say one thing before she got here. You know, we want Carla, who is our contracts negotiator and site selection coordinator, to go around and get good bids. You want to stay in two digits. You want to stay under $85. You want to meet in first and maybe second tier cities. You want to do all of these things. Now, I'm sorry if this is going to sound a little lectury, but this is what I need. I need to get this out. Any activity that you do as an individual reflects on the collective group, okay? There have been two items brought to my attention yesterday. Don't think that these hotels don't talk to each other. Don't think that the Westin didn't call the Adams Mark. Don't think that the Birmingham Sheraton won't be calling the Westin and the Hilton. They want to know about our groups. It's like if you want to have something, you ask for references. Ladies and gentlemen, two items were brought to my attention yesterday. One, these charges will be placed onto the person individually, not onto the American Council of the Blind. One, people have been one incidence of somebody using the heavenly pillows for their heavenly dog. Those pillows will be charged against their personal master bill. Now, also, prior to being a convention coordinator, I was national secretary, and prior to being that, I was assistant convention coordinator. I remember making this next announcement when I was in assistant convention coordinator in Chicago. Please do not let your dog use the ice bucket to drink out of. Okay? I've heard another incident of that. They have to be thrown out. And that price of that ice bucket will be charged against the individual room. So you say, well, fine, I'll pay for it. But again, what you do individually affects us all collectively. Help us out, ladies and gentlemen. Please govern yourselves accordingly. Let's have a wonderful rest of the week. I'll get announcements to you as soon as I can. I'm working on it. And have a great, it's Education Day. Being a teacher this day means a lot to me. Have a great morning session, and I'll be talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. It certainly is Education Day. And let me also say, let me remind all of you, that this Education Day is sponsored by Bank of America. Bank of America has a booth down at the exhibit area where they're demonstrating ATM machines or an ATM machine. You can get cash without a surcharge. I shouldn't say cash for free because it's never free, but cash without a surcharge. And many, many thanks this morning to Bank of America for being the sponsor of Education Day. I neglected to announce yesterday, and I will announce today, that Monday, which of course was Transportation Day, was sponsored by the IBM Corporation. As a former IBMer, I'm very pleased to make that announcement, and I'm also pleased to announce, would like to highlight to you, ladies and gentlemen, the fact that we are gaining corporate sponsorship for the things we do in ACB, and that is to all of our advantage, all being everybody from IBM to all ACB members, or Bank of America and all ACB members. I don't know about you, but I like getting that free cash instead of a $4 or $5 surcharge. On Sunday night, I had with me at the podium a few people that deserved special recognition. And today, once again, on the podium, I have a few people who deserve some honorable mention, some special recognition that we don't have on our program as speakers necessarily per se, but people who, because of their work, because of their example, because of what they do every day, as in what you do every day for ACB, materially affect and improve the life of blind people. One such person I want to introduce to you now, and I got a couple others this morning to introduce, but I'd like to bring forward on Education Day, just to say a few words to you, the director of the American Printing House for the Blind. Ladies and gentlemen, give a warm welcome to Dr. Tuck Tinsley.
Thank you, Chris. We at APH congratulate and thank ACB for today's focus on education. And we also want to thank all of you for your support for the federal appropriation to APH, which went from $6.5 million in 1996 to $15.5 million this year. We produced 10 new products in 1996, and the past 3 years we've averaged 51 new products. So the message I wish to convey to you in this brief time this morning is that APH has begun to focus on developing adult products. Terry Turlow, who many of you know and who has surveyed many of you, is our adult products project leader, and we're really focusing in this area. For my last couple of minutes, I'd like to introduce one of APH's most valuable resources, the inventor of the Braille and Speak, Fred Gassone. Fred is the technical specialist in customer service, and he is just a real treasure. He's going to tell you a bit about a product that we introduced 2 weeks ago. Fred?
Hello. I want to tell you about the book port. The book port is a standalone, handheld, smaller than a TV remote control device that lets you download reading material from your computer, take it, and read anywhere. It's powered by two AA batteries. You can get with it in excess of 60 hours of listening time. You can play it through external speakers, or in this case, the PA system, if everything works. And it comes with earphones. The intent is that it be a personal reading device. It can play DAISY, MP3, ordinary text files, and it can translate back from BRF files. So if you get Web Braille or the Reader's Digest on disk that we offer, which is in a grade 2 format or a contracted Braille format, as we now say, it'll back translate it and read it to you. So now I'd like to let the book port speak for itself a little bit.
Reading keypad.
My nerves.
This is... Is everybody awake now? We have this...
Reading keypad.
No, it wasn't. That's one of those things. It worked okay early.
Softer.
That may be a bit better.
Volume, reading keypad.
All right, now we can see what's on the files here.
Folder, /memo, cold heart.
This is an MP3 file, cold heart, by Nora Jones. We're not taking requests.
So hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme.
All right, that is, that's enough of that one for now.
Volume 38, reading keypad.
We also have...
Don't know why. Sam's Teach Yourself Computer Basic Loud Louder.
This is Sam's Teach Yourself Computer Basic in 24 hours. This is a DAISY file. This is the sort of thing you might get from Recording for the Blind. It's human speech, digitally recorded.
About RFBND Audio Plus Book. This RFBND Audio Plus book has been digitally indexed for enhanced book navigation.
Now,
major divisions.
You can also advance by page number.
Or unit. Putting the level.
Page. Tense. Page Roman numeral 4. Page Roman numeral 5. Page Roman numeral 6.
So it gives you control of what you're reading. And one more sample.
Volume 3 reading. Esther. Potter and the Order of the...
This is from Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Trees rustled in neighboring gardens, and the mundane rumble of cars in Magnolia Crescent 43 filled the air again. Stood quite still, all his senses taking in the abrupt return.
And that's it.
Thank you very much, Tuck Tinsley and Fred Gassoni, American Printing House for the Blind.
That's available at the booth, they're saying, Chris. That's available at the APH booth.
The APH booth, yes, indeed. As much a household word in the blind community as American Printing House for the Blind is probably the Perkins School for the Blind, a place that we've known about, heard about, read about since we were very small children, if we were visually impaired children. I'm very pleased to announce the new director has come to Perkins. He's with us on the podium this morning, and to just say a few words of greeting so you can hear his voice and get to know him, I'd like to introduce Steve Rothstein.
I bet it's Dr. Steve Rothstein, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
Thank you very much. It's truly an honor and a pleasure to be here. I'm really here not to give remarks, but really to thank you for how much I've learned. I've enjoyed working with the Massachusetts affiliate for the last several months and having a chance to meet many of you over the last few days, and look forward to working with you individually and collectively over the coming weeks, months, and years as Perkins goes forward. We're starting to make plans now. A year from now, we'll be beginning the celebration of our 175th year of providing service. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And last, but absolutely not least, because after all, it's for these people that education really exists, children, I'd like to have say a few words to you, the Executive Director of the National Association of Parents of Children of the Visually Impaired, Susan LaVenture.
There we go. You've got a fan club out there.
Wow, that's a great welcome. I am delighted to have been invited to speak before your General Assembly this morning. It's the first time I've had this opportunity, so it's a big deal for me. I'm very, very happy. And wanting to let you know, just very briefly, a nappy commercial and capsule. The reason I wanted to share today is I know many of you have heard about our organization, perhaps, and perhaps not, but I want you to begin to learn about who we are and what we're all about and what are our tangible resources that you can refer parents that you know to our organization, as well as use our organization as a resource for yourselves. To let you know that I'm a mother myself, I became involved when 16 years ago, my son, Alex, was born a healthy baby boy. And when he was 10 months old, he was diagnosed with a rare eye cancer, retinoblastoma, which I know some of you are familiar with. At that time, as a parent, it was a very devastating experience for me. I was, you know, in shock and grief and wanting to get support, really wanting to connect with other parents, wanting to know what do I need to know as a parent to encourage my son's development. And then very quickly thereafter, what's my role in my son's education? What do I need to know? And I began the search. And my search was not unlike other parents. And in my search, I found out about NAPV, which little did I know that I'd be speaking before your assembly 16 years later today. NAPV, and that's what NAPV is all about. We're an organization to support parents, and we're resource and information. We focus on the parent-to-parent support. We're a national network. We also do a lot of parent education, teaching parents and families what they need to know. We offer, for you to know, you can access us as a resource. We offer parent workshops on the Individuals with Disabilities Act, social issues, resources, medical issues, what's important for families. And also, to let you know that we're an independent parent organization. We have a national board of directors, and all of the parents that are on our board are parents of visually impaired kids. And our membership is for all ages, from birth through adulthood, into adulthood. We have a lot of parents that have joined our organization that their kids are adults. And we also are located. We have a national office at Perkins School for the Blind. For 10 years, Perkins School for the Blind has been very kind to give us office space. It has worked out very, very well, and we're very happy to have Stephen Rothstein to be working closely with us, too. One of the areas that I feel that we can work towards, this is just a beginning for me to get to know you even more, is that we want to look at ways that NAPV and ACB can collaborate more together and supporting parents and work together as organizations. Some of the ideas that I have, we've been doing a lot of work this year, which has been wonderful, on the national level with the Sensory Roundtable to advocate with ACB, AFB, and other national organizations on important issues. And we want to continue that, but we want to develop more on the statewide level and look at areas and opportunities where our parents and your members can work together on the statewide level for advocacy and support to families in helping us also developing new chapters. Here at the conference today, we have parent leaders from Hawaii, Texas, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania at this conference. Parents, and come by and visit us at our booth. And just a closure. A little story about what happened here today at ACB. I mean, not today, but when I arrived, my boxes, none of the NAPV materials came on Saturday. They just didn't show up on that special Saturday delivery. So needless to say, I'm at the NAPV booth on my own, having some great conversations with people throughout the weekend. But when I had just was disheveled and coming in on Saturday trying to find these boxes and trying to figure out what am I going to do, and Michael Smitherman, who is the ACB exhibits coordinator, was very helpful in saying, you know, show me where to talk to this woman who's in charge of the exhibit management. She works for the exhibit company. And he introduced me as, you know, from NAPV, and he said, you know, this is a parent of a child with a visual impairment. And so he introduced us. It ended up being that this mom, I got talking to her about what I do, and I happened to mention, you know, I asked her, well, what eye condition does your son have? And she said, retinoblastoma. And my son had retinoblastoma too. And immediately we just were able to connect. She had never met another parent or talked to another parent of a child with retinoblastoma before, and her son is 9 years old. And we really were able to have a great session together in the back room of the exhibit area together. And so that's what NAPV is all about. So it made it all worthwhile to come here, boxes or not. So thank you very much, and I hope to get to know you more.
How honored we are in ACB to be able to have people like this come and welcome us in the morning and be with us during Education Day. Will Kathy Skivers get to a microphone, please, to deliver her report? And while she's doing that, I'd like to remind everyone, speaker seminar tonight in 2623. We have lots of nice things for people, sodas, drinks, whatever you like. And one thing we have this year that has not always been available, but many of you may be happy to know this, is coffee. Today's coffee flavor. Yes, different days, different flavors. Today's coffee flavor is hazelnut. And I would like to say that this coffee is available this year thanks to, and please help me acknowledge, the Hawaii Association of the Blind for bringing about 50 pounds.
I'm at the mic, Chris.
Well, not 50, but many, many pounds of coffee, and I hope you'll help me drink it this week. 2623 tonight, speakers seminar. And if anyone is in the audience who was doing the transportation presentations yesterday, Alice and others, please come tonight because there were a lot of folks looking for you last night to talk to you. Thanks very much. I now recognize the chair of the nominations committee for her report. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Catherine Skivers.
Mr. President, I've been in ACB a very long time, and it's the first time I had the privilege of chairing the nominating committee. And in California, I'm known to be one of the best Braille readers around. Well, I had some experience with my Braille last evening, and if you ask my committee, they're going to tell you a lot of stories. You can believe all of them. One thing I did at one point was combine two organizations. It was very startling to me and to everybody in the room, but it was a wonderful thing. You have a wonderful nominating committee. Congratulations to those of you who selected your members from your affiliates and special interest groups to come. They're one of the finest committees I've ever had the privilege to chair. And we did get our work done, and here are this year we had nomination of officers. And for president, we have nominated Christopher Gray from San Francisco.
Thank you.
Chris, I was trying to reach you to find out for sure where you work. He is a technical writer for, I believe it's a Bright Corporation in San Francisco. Is that correct?
Bright Mail Corporation.
Yes. Well, he does, and he's been our president for 2 years. For first vice president, the committee has selected and to put forward the name of Steve Spiker from Lincoln, Nebraska. Steve is a practicing attorney who has his own private law practice in Lincoln, and he's been our vice president for 2 years. The next person the group selected to be second vice president is a lady I've known for quite some time. We've probably been around, well, we've been around as long as ACB has. MJ Schmidt from Forest Park, Illinois. MJ retired from Sears Roebuck as a senior systems analyst, and she's been on the board for a very long time. I told her I was going to say. Donna Seliger has been selected as secretary of ACB. At least she's placed a nomination. She lives in Des Moines, Iowa, and she is president, I believe, of the United Blind. She's retired from the food service business, and she's been our secretary for a couple of years. And for treasurer, the committee has put forward the name of Mike Godino from Baltimore, New York. Mike is a systems advocacy coordinator from Queens Independent Living Center. Now, you see, committee, I can read Braille, and Mike's name is put forward, and I want to remind you all that these are the members of the organization that have been put forward by the nominating committee. From the floor, you will be able to make nominations if you wish to do so. But remember, when putting forward a name, you must have the permission of the person that you're going to nominate. And I want to, Mr. Chairman, at this time, thank everybody on the committee. Thank you for appointing me. You took a risk. And I tell you what, we had a lot of fun in that committee, and we got our job done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. You ready, Don?
Mr. President.
There's been a call for the floor, and I will recognize now Donna Seliger, Secretary of ACB.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know that there are a lot of caucuses scheduled for this week, and I would like to attend all of them. However, I am recovering from major surgery, and it just will not be possible for me to do that. I will try to make as many as I can, but if I don't make your caucus, it's not because I didn't want to be there. It's only because my health is important to me. Thank you.
I didn't tell Donna I was going to say this. She might get mad at me. But, you know, health issues can be very, very important to us. And I'm so happy that Donna is here with us this week to be our secretary. She had a little visit to the emergency room last week, but got over it, got here, and I thank her very much for doing that. We're getting a little tight on time, but I'm going to take a risk and recognize for the consideration of at least one of the credentials matters, one of the Constitution and bylaws matters that was read yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, Ray Campbell.
Okay. Thank you and good morning. Real quick thing, our next meeting of the committee, the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, is this afternoon at 5 o'clock in the Lawrence Room, and I just want to say those meetings are open if any of you would like to come and see what we do in that committee. We have a lot of fun in that committee, too. Can't let Kathy have all the fun. This morning we're going to consider an amendment, a bylaw amendment, so it takes a simple majority to pass it. It's one that I read yesterday. And it is on Braille page 30, bylaw 3, section C. We're going to strike out the entire section and replace it with a new section C. The current wording is C. Dues for sustaining members shall be $25 a year for individuals and $50 a year for organizations. The proposed wording to replace that is C. The annual dues for sustaining members shall be divided into the following categories: $50 or more for supporting memberships, $100 or more for bronze, $1,000 or more for silver, $10,000 or more for gold, and $100,000 or more for platinum. The committee recommends a do pass on this amendment. And I so move. Okay. Okay, is there any debate? Hearing no calls for the floor, even though some of you are out in Beaver County. let's go to the vote. All those who wish to vote in favor of this amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Or 907.
The amendment is adopted. Okay. Chris, you want me to do one more?
Do one more, Ray.
Okay. All right. Okay. Next, we will move to Braille page 5, Article 3, Section A, Subsection 2. We're going to add "and entities," quote, it's in quotes, after the word "individuals," and we're also going to add, quote, "and those persons holding junior memberships at large," close quote, before the period at the end of the subsection. Current wording, 2. non-voting members shall be the individuals holding sustaining memberships. The proposed wording is two. Non-voting members shall be the individuals and entities holding sustaining memberships and those persons holding junior memberships at large. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Point of clarification?
Yes, point of clarification?
I thought I understood.
Please identify yourself.
Pardon me?
Please identify yourself.
This is David Suli from New Jersey. I thought I understood that we needed a third reading before voting on these.
The way the ACB Constitution works is we read them one day, and then we read and vote on them the next day or on a subsequent day. So we will read them. We always read them. We don't take discussion at that first reading. The second reading is when we vote on them.
Okay. And the second reading is open to discussion.
Yes, it is.
On the floor once. I don't personally need such. Thank you for the clarification.
Not a problem, sir. Any other discussion on this? Okay, let's proceed to vote. All those in favor of the adoption of this amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Okay. And what's your pleasure, Mr. President?
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, well, let's do the third one then that we took yesterday, and we'll get these taken care of then. The third one, this is again another second reading. It's on Braille page 25, Bylaw 1, fourth sentence. Add, quote, accompanied by 1 year's dues, close quote, after the word, quote, therefore, close quote. The current wording is, this is a, this is the current wording of the fourth sentence of that bylaw is, quote, any person who has not reached the age of 18 years may become a junior member at large by completing an official application, therefore, and by designating his or her preferred edition of the Braille Forum. The proposed wording, quote, any person who has not reached the age of 18 years may become a junior member at large by completing an official application, therefore, accompanied by 1 year's dues, and by designating his, her preferred edition of the Braille Forum. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. Okay, just before I take debate, I wanted to say that there are the dues for junior members at large. There are dues set for that, and it's $1. It's in Bylaw 3, Section A is where that is. So just so you all know where that is set. Any debate on this amendment? Hearing no calls for the floor, we'll proceed to vote. All in favor of the adoption of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Before I turn the chair back over to the Mr. President, I would say that the copies, we are still working on getting the copies of these amendments done, the ones that we just voted on, as well as some other ones. The press room is working hard on those. Those will be available at the information desk, and I don't believe they're there now. I was just trying to check on that earlier if the press room had delivered them, but their line was busy. So we'll keep checking on that, and we'll let you know when they're out there. You can check out. Excuse me, yeah?
Ray, do you want to present any material for us to consider tomorrow?
If I have time, sure.
You do?
Okay. Let's...
Okay. I wasn't sure if you did, but MJ says you do, so...
Oh. Well, and when MJ says I have time, by golly, we're not... Who's going to argue with MJ? Let's take three amendments that we can read. These are first readings, so this is not the time for discussion. This first one I'm going to read is on Braille page 50, Bylaw 7, Section A. And there are going to be three different amendments that affect the same section of the bylaw. They address different things, and that's why the committee separated them out. We're going to strike out, quote, a chair and one additional member, close quote, in the second sentence and replace it with, quote, two members, close quote. We're also going to add a new sentence immediately following the second sentence, which will read, quote, the board shall select a chairperson from among its elected members in the year this amendment is adopted and every 2 years thereafter. The current wording, and this is the second sentence as it's currently written, quote, the board shall be selected and constituted in the following manner. Every odd-numbered year, the president, at the close of the annual convention, shall appoint a chairperson and one additional member of the board. And every even-numbered year, the annual convention shall elect by a majority vote in accordance with voting procedures contained in the Constitution or in the bylaws, the three remaining members of the board, provided, however, that no board member shall serve more than three consecutive terms, and no more than one board member shall be either appointed or elected to the board of publications from any one state. The proposed wording, and this is the amended second sentence as well as the new sentence that will follow it, is, quote, the board shall be selected and constituted in the following manner. Every odd-numbered year, the president, at the close of the annual convention, shall appoint two members of the board, and every even-numbered year, the annual convention shall elect by a majority vote in accordance with voting procedures contained in the Constitution or in the bylaws, the three remaining members of the board, provided, however, that no board member shall serve more than three consecutive terms, and no more than one board member shall be either elected or appointed, and no more than one board member shall be either appointed or elected to the board of publications from any one state. The board shall select a chairperson from among its elected members in the year this amendment is adopted and every 2 years thereafter. Okay, let's see. We have another one. This is on Rail page 51, Bylaw 7, Section A, third sentence. Insert the words, quote, ACB list serves, with a comma and a space immediately before the words and ACB radio. Okay, the current wording. It shall be the duty of the Board of Publications to approve or disapprove employment by the executive director of the editor of the Braille Forum and to establish editorial standards and policies applicable to all American Council of the Blind communication formats, including but not limited to periodicals, the ACB convention programs and ACB brochures, the ACB website, and ACB radio. The proposed wording, it shall be the duty of the Board of Publications to approve or disapprove employment by the executive director of the editor of the Braille Forum and to establish editorial standards and policies applicable to all American Council of the Blind communication formats, including but not limited to periodicals, the ACB convention programs and ACB brochures, the ACB website, ACB listservs, and ACB radio. And finally, the last one I'll read first this morning is on also on Braille page 51, Bylaw 7, Section A. Insert two new sentences following the fifth sentence in the section. And that fifth sentence reads, just for guidance, for context, is a majority of the Board of Publications may agree to include an editor/producer of any nationally distributed Board of Publications project of the American Council of the Blind as an ex officio member of the board. The proposed wording, and again this will follow the sentence I just read, quote, the Board of Publications shall ensure that the ability of ACB members to freely express and share opinions is not abridged by any mechanism within ACB unless such speech is of an obscene nature or is clearly intended to personally attack without any redeeming quality, or is clearly, as understood by a reasonable person incomprehensible, or unintelligible. The Board of Publications shall protect these rights of free speech by taking necessary actions to set policy, provide redress through orders to reverse or modify actions of ACB staff or elected officials, and to periodically advise the membership of their constitutional right and responsibility for the free exchange of ideas in order to advance the democracy of ACB. Mr. President, that would complete the first reading of those three amendments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the report. I will now turn the lectern over and the rest of the session of the morning over to the second Vice President of the American Council of the Blind. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in giving a warm welcome to M.J. Schmidt.
Good morning. I'd just like you to know that I feel empowered this morning in a way I haven't felt in a long time. Last year, I did Education Day, which was a privilege, but by the end of the morning, it was kind of a problem because we just had too much for the morning, and we ended up late. And so Chris has been asking me all these questions about how much time Ray had, and you know, it kind of makes you feel special. Let me tell you what I have been doing in the past 2 years. Wherever asked to do so, I have represented ACB to the best of my ability. I have shepherded the McDaniel Committee, the Membership Committee, the Information Access Committee, to bring them to a place where they're doing what they're doing today. And it's really nice. You keep in touch with members that you normally wouldn't hear from, and you share ideas. And I'd like to say we have this place where we do our conference calling. And usually when you're on a conference call, you're pretty upset because of the cost of it. But we have been allowed to use Meeting Place at no charge. And email's a great thing, but people actually talking to one another, voice inflection, attitudes come through pretty clearly. And I think it's helped our committee's function. And I want to thank Roger and Chris and all the people who helped this happen, because I think it's made us a stronger, better organization. Another one of my little chores is to kind of get on Chris once in a while when he's maybe not doing what he's supposed to do. And he doesn't say too much to me because I'm about his mother's age, you know. And so he looks to me with, deference, let's put it that way. But on to today. I guess I want to say one other thing. I said the other night that I was tickled pink that the book was coming out. And you all should be tickled pink that the book is coming out. And you all should buy a ticket to come to the gala tomorrow night, because we really need to celebrate this book. You know, there was talk about having a fancy reception in Washington and inviting all kinds of dignitaries. But doggone it, this book belongs to us. And we should come and we should revel in it. You do not know how impatiently I have waited over the years since I was one of those bad people that was there for this book to come out, for the world to finally know the truth about why the ACB came into being. We were a grassroots organization who believed in states' rights and a state right to govern itself and not a top-down structure. So go buy a ticket and come to the gala and let's have a blast. I'd like to exercise a personal preference, and boy, it is a personal preference, too. This is Education Day, and I was going to do this later, but I'd like, Paula Sprecher, would you get to a microphone? We in Chicago have had a winner of the Golden Apple Award. It was only given to 10 teachers in Northern Illinois. And Paula Sprecher, who was a Qualls Scholarship winner in 1984, is teaching at Farnsworth Elementary School and teaches blind and visually impaired kids. And I know she's taught them all right, because I was there a week ago last Friday for a career day. And what a great bunch of kids she has. Anyway, she won this for outstanding teaching. And she got to do all sorts of things, like sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at the Cubs game and all kinds of good stuff. So would you all join me in giving a warm welcome to one of people we all should, all you young people should mentor, Paula Sprecher.
Good morning. Can you hear me? Thanks for saying my speech, MJ.
No, I didn't.
I've been a resource room teacher for 5 years in a very, very crowded room that I share with two other teachers. There are a lot of computers and tables and shelves of wonderful Braille books, but there isn't a lot of room for us. So it's been kind of a struggle. A new modular has been built, and I'll be moving out there in a couple of weeks. I also taught a student taught at Farnsworth Elementary School, and I went from student teaching right into becoming a head teacher with no interview at all. And it was wonderful. I was told that I wouldn't be able to be a resource room teacher because most jobs are itinerant in Chicago, and luckily the teacher that I taught under was retiring, so that was my segue in. The children that I work with in the morning are totally blind and moderately cognitively impaired, and we work on things like basic pre-voc skills and refining tactual skills. After that, I teach kindergarten children and first graders things like language arts, pre-Braille skills, Braille, mathematics, activities of daily living. I usually write 2 or 3 grants a year to supplement the things that Chicago Public Schools can furnish to us. And this year I wrote a wonderful grant for cooking, and the children learned so much from that. It was the most interactive thing we've ever done together. Now a little bit about the Golden Apple Awards. I was nominated by a colleague in late November. 1,100 teachers from the Chicago area were nominated for this award. The foundation sent a package to me containing fill-in-the-blank questions and essay questions. And I read over the application, and I thought, oh, this is so easy, and I put it down for a week. And then I looked at it again, and I thought, oh, my gosh, this is really hard. I better get working on it. And I worked, I kept on tweaking the essay questions over and over again until it was so late it was time to turn in the application, and I ran it down there by myself. And I never thought I would make it. I really didn't. I thought there's a lot of good teachers out there. I'm trying my best, but I'm not one of them. And a few weeks later, I was notified that I was a finalist in Earth. Out of 466 teachers who applied, there were 33 finalists chosen. The next step in the process from being a finalist was that a two-person observation team came to observe me, and we were to turn in 3 lesson plans. And I was wondering why only 3 if they were going to be there all day. Well, I found out that the rest of the day they were interviewing different people, like the principal and colleagues and past students and present students. Then a few weeks later, I was surprised by a visit from Arne Duncan, who is the CEO of Chicago Public Schools, and he announced to everyone that I was one of the 2003 Golden Apple winners. So it's been wonderful. It's been a blessing. Thank you.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're all about. Well, now I'm going to introduce to you someone who is near and dear to all of us and who you have heard before and who I'm sure you will hear again this week. And he is going to moderate our panel discussion this morning. So, without further ado, I give you Jay Dowd, President of the Pennsylvania Council.
Thank you very much, MJ, and good morning, everybody, and are you having a good time in Pittsburgh? We hope so. Congratulations, Paula, on receiving that award. This is a wonderful thing because this is kind of a good way to segue into our topic this morning on the modern challenges of educating blind students today. I think we have assembled here on the stage a panel that's really brings to ACB a lot of different and diverse efforts and opinions and a lot of strength. They really have a lot to offer us. I'm going to introduce quickly our panel and then let them talk. First person I'm going to talk about is Janet Simon. Janet is the director of the Western Pennsylvania School for Blind Children right here in Pittsburgh. And, of course, Janet is hosting some of us today on a tour later on. And we'll be anxious to see her newer facilities out there. The next person is Dr. Bernadette Kappen. I'm very pleased to be able to be working with Bernadette the past couple of years in my work at Overbook with Bernadette. And Susan LaVenture, you've heard from Susan earlier, the president of the National Association of Parents of the Visually Impaired. And Jean Ann Vogelman. Jean Ann works with us at Overbook as our parent advocate. And Jean Ann is a parent of a visually impaired student. So we have quite a lot to talk about here and a lot to talk about with respect to educating students today. And we'll hopefully, I don't know how way things go here, hopefully have time for some questions. I think the way we're going to start this is ask Janet and Bernadette to give us a little overview, a brief overview of the schools for the blind in Pennsylvania, the way it works. And Janet, since you're the local person here, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Jay, and good morning. It's so nice to be with you, and welcome to Pittsburgh. It's a great honor for our city that you chose it to be the site of this very impressive meeting. I would like to introduce you to the Western Pennsylvania School for Blind Children, and I hope that you have an opportunity to visit with us while you're in Pittsburgh. Our school is located in the Oakland area of the city, very close to the University of Pittsburgh, and I must say, with all humility, that I think it's a very impressive plant. I've been associated with the school for 35 years, so I was there prior to the passage of IDEA, and I know later this morning you're going to be talking about that federal legislation and its tremendous impact on the delivery of services to individuals with disabilities. When IDEA was enacted in 1977, it had tremendous implication to all schools for the blind in the United States. And I think each of these institutions needed to consider the impact of the law and how that would influence its future. In Western Pennsylvania, we were very deliberate in terms of looking at both opportunities and challenges. And while at one time the school had a very strong academic program, we have changed and changed very dramatically. Today, the mission and focus of the school is to provide services to blind students ages 3 through 21 who also have additional disabilities. And the additional disabilities tend to be severe and profound. The impact on our curriculum is fairly obvious. We no longer have an academic program. We do not train students to go on to college or to post-secondary training. Instead, we offer a functional life skills curriculum. All of our teachers are certified in vision impairment. That's because we don't want to lose the fact that these youngsters are severely visually impaired. And if 90% of what we learn is through vision, then it makes perfect sense for our teachers to be prepared to adapt and to modify materials so that they have real meaning to our students. There is a residential component to the school, and about a third of the enrollment spends 5 nights a week living in our dormitory. This year, our enrollment was 185 students. They come from all over western Pennsylvania. That would be as far north as Erie and going down to the southern boundaries of the state and over to Ohio. If you want to move towards the east, we take all of the children west of the Susquehanna River, and those who live east of it can go to the Overbrook School for the Blind, and Bernadette's going to talk about their program in just a few minutes. I would say to you that the school has many interesting programs, have a strong vocational program. In 2001, we were recognized by the United States Department of Education when we were named to be a National Blue Ribbon School of Excellence. And we, of course, are very proud of that because I think it shows that a school like ours can be recognized at a national level for the quality of the programs that it's providing. So let me turn the mic over to Bernadette, and she can talk about the Overbrook School for the Blind, which is different in many respects from the school in Pittsburgh. Bernadette?
Thanks, Janet. Good morning. Thanks very much for inviting me to be with you today. Overbrook does have a different focus than Western Pennsylvania School for Blind Children, and I think the contrast that Janet and I share with you this morning is the picture that you see of schools for the blind around the United States. I would say that it's critical for a school for the blind to plan for their future. And I think that Janet mentioned the planning for Western Pennsylvania. And I know that talking with other people from Schools for the Blind, if one doesn't plan their future, someone else will plan it for you. And it may not be what you want for people that are blind and visually impaired. So Overbrook has taken the position in working with our children to have a diverse student body. And our population somewhat mirrors the information that you will see in the literature. There was a study done in 1996 called PRISM, where they looked at children birth through five to see what were the causes of blindness and what was the population like. They discovered in that survey that there would be more children that are multi-handicapped than not. The major eye conditions were cortical visual impairment, retinopathy of prematurity, and optic nerve hypoplasia, all having additional disabilities often attached to them. We have at Overbrook, out of our 200 students, about 40% of the population would be blind only and would follow a traditional academic curriculum, and the rest of the population would have additional disabilities from very mild to severe and profound. And we feel that it's important to offer a diverse program for the students ages 3 through 21. I would like to say that Overbrook has spent a lot of time in planning its future in looking at the needs of technology as part of literacy. And we've spent the last 7 years equipping our campus so that all the students, from our youngest students to the oldest, have the proper technology to be able to compete with their sighted peers. And we were awarded 2 national awards for that service, one through Pioneering Partners and the other through Compact. We were the only schools for children with disabilities that received those awards and the only schools for the blind. And we really thought that was important to be in the arena, that the typical educators understand that children that are blind and visually impaired need access to technology probably more than the typical learner. At Overbrook, we have a fairly large early intervention program where we provide services to children birth through three. We see about 135 children in their homes in the Philadelphia and the surrounding communities. All of our teachers in early intervention and at the school are also certified teachers of the visually impaired. And I would ask you to advocate always, even for the children that are multiply handicapped, that they have a certified teacher of the visually impaired. And probably more important for someone who's multi-handicapped, that many of those children, their vision, the little that they have remaining, may be their best learning mode, that we need people who understand vision and promoting that within the children. We also have a small international program where we provide services in Southeast Asia and in Eastern Europe, and we follow a technology model there, using the technology to develop reading materials, standardized formats for people, as well as training in technology. We have an outreach program that we provide information to people in the community, and we also have a small outreach program where we provide direct services to children that are 3 through 5 years old. So I think it's important for schools for the blind to be constantly looking at what the consumers need, and that would be the children and their families, adapting their programs to meet those needs, and building strong skills in the staff. And it really is a challenge, but I think something that really is essential to keep schools for the blind active in the community.
Thanks, Bernadette. I want to now introduce Jean Ann Vogelman, who is working for Overbrook, and she is our parent liaison. Jean Ann, you want to sort of outline your job description?
Yes, I will. Is this working? Yeah, there we go. Yes, good morning, everyone, and thank you for having me. In addition to being the parent liaison at Overbrook School for the Blind in our early childhood program, I also am the NAPFE representative for this particular region, for Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, D.C., Ohio, and Delaware, and Maryland. but in my role as parent liaison, it became very important to me, as my child, who is now 13, I learned very early that I didn't have any control over the issues that surrounded his visual impairment or his disabilities, but I did have some control over his educational life and how that impacted him so he could be competitively employed as an adult. And information was power and control for me. And through the parent liaison program at Overbrook and through NAPFE, one of my major soapboxes is to get out there and let parents have the information that they need so they can make the best choices, so they can understand that there are a continuum of services, that they don't get to just, you know, there isn't just one set program for every child, regardless of his ability and or disability. That every child, what he may need this year or what she may need this year, may be different next year. And that parents need to know, you know, especially since their children have a low incidence disability, how IDEA, the Individuals with Disability Education Act, will impact them. Most of the families that I meet don't even know that there are federal and state legislation out there that will impact their children. For most of the people in this room, I would assume that there were not mandated services that protected you in terms of education when you were children. And I think a lot of parents today have come to take that mandated legislation for granted. So it's our job, and I'm really looking at, especially in the states that I represent through NAPFE and in Pennsylvania with Overbrook School for the Blind, at making a real collaboration between ACB and NAPFE and ACB and the parents of young children so they can use you as a resource and you can use us as a resource to make sure that the children coming up will be consumers in the blind community with the best access to all the resources that are out there for them.
All right, Jean Ann. Now we've laid the groundwork for what I think will be the rest of our discussion, because I think the way to start with this is to talk about the schools for the blind and the public schools. We'll sort of do it together. How are the schools for the blind, first of all, dealing with the idea of IEP? Remember, we have to have an annual individual education plan now, part of IDEA. And working with the public schools, and then I guess we'll then follow that discussion can go on because Susan can get in on this now, and then talk about what considerations there are from from the public school perspective. So who wants to start? Should we start with the schools for the blind? Bernadette, you want to start it and then we'll go that way?
I think the schools for the blind are under the same regulations that any school district. We're required to follow the same information that's put out there for parents. I think some of the considerations and the challenges that we face would be the aspect of the continuum of placements, in that, you know, in IDEA, there's a very strong piece there related to the least restrictive environment, and in some states, that's viewed as definitely the public school, not a situation like a school for the blind. And I think that as a school for the blind, it's essential that we get out the message of the specialized services that we can offer and the resources that we can provide to the community as well as to the students that attend the school for the blind. Cost sometimes is a factor, I think, in people considering students coming to the school for the blind. However, I know of a student who had been at Overbrook and went back to a local public school, and to receive the same services that he was getting at Overbrook, the cost was almost double if the situation is done correctly. So it's not always true that coming to a school for the blind is necessarily more expensive than educating someone in the public school. I think the issue that's really important at schools for the blind is that we have the most competent staff possible, and recruitment is an issue in many schools for the blind around the United States. As you know, recruitment is an issue for the field in trying to attract people. Fortunately, at Overbrook, we don't have that as an issue. We are connected with three different teacher training programs, and we easily are able to attract people, and fortunately, we're able to keep them once they're there. I think that's a key at Schools for the Blind, to make sure that once we attract a professional to be with us, that we set up an environment that they stay with us. And that's true, I think, in regular education as well. So I believe we need to really get out there and make the public understand that for some children, the least restrictive environment can be the school for the blind, and that we can provide opportunities that may not be possible in the public school. The one issue related to the public schools that I think sometimes is challenging for students would be, it's a good thing they're assigned a teacher aide to help them with materials and those types of things. However, I see sometimes the teacher aide being a disadvantage, that person follows the individual around, and that person sometimes even does the child's work. And I say that absolutely when we get students that will come to our high school program that have never taken a note for themselves because the teacher aide is providing that. So I think Schools for the Blind need to work cooperatively with public schools to help them understand what the role might be of that teacher aide, so the child gets the best possible education and that the teacher aide doesn't become the child's teacher. And I think for Schools for the Blind and public schools, areas that are a challenge would be in the higher academic math and science, and making sure that we're able to challenge the students the way their typical students are performing in the schools. Janet?
Yeah, I think, Janet, if you want to comment on that, but one of the things I thought we might follow up before, Janet, well, since you mentioned that, Bernadette, Susan, the challenges that the public schools have that Bernadette mentions, are we getting anywhere with that issue of, because I've heard that too about the aides and so on doing a lot of stuff for the kids?
There are many challenges, although there's lack, I mean, basically the reality is that there are many kids who do attend public schools are not getting the supports that they need to be successful. There's a national shortage of personnel in the country for teachers who specifically are trained to work with the visually impaired. There are kids who aren't getting as much Braille instruction or special instruction they need. There are kids who aren't getting orientation mobility services. And schools, it depends on, it varies from district to district as to, you know, some districts, actually we have a parent here from Texas where it's been very successful. So we don't want to be dismayed by all these challenges, because the goal is that our kids have been become more integrated within society because of IDEA at school and work. And
so it is varying around
yes.
the country.
Yeah. And so
it can be successful if a student has the support that they need.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have challenges, and some schools aren't dealing with the issues. They're actually avoiding dealing with it.
And that's where you come in a lot of times.
Right.
Or someone like Jean Ann.
Would you like to make a comment?
Yeah.
Well, and I just think that comes back to what we were saying earlier about if the families are aware of the specially related services and the services that their child needs in basis to their education and their vision, then the schools necessarily can't be dodging that bullet, and they will have to address it. And it has been, as Bernadette said, the school districts do vary from district to district, just like any school district in a regular education varies from district to district. But just as recently as last week, I was able to give about 20 copies of NAPFE's Awareness Magazine to the special education director in a particular school district, to her to give to her families that have visual impairment. And she was very receptive to it. So I think we're seeing some real nice collaboration and growth. Not to say that there aren't lots of challenges, but there is a difference.
Janet, now you've been dealing with a special population, and I think that this we have to fit this into the whole piece, too. Would you explain how this, what we've been talking about, fits in with what you've been doing?
Yeah. One of the things that I'd like to say is to recognize the quality of public school programs in the greater Pittsburgh area. I think the Western Pennsylvania School for Blind Children moved in the direction of the multiply disabled after realizing that the city of Pittsburgh and Allegheny County schools were doing really a commendable job in terms of educating blind and visually impaired learners. I think there are two real challenges that face our organization right now. One has to do with preschool training. I think throughout the United States, there's a tremendous amount of inconsistencies when it comes to educating blind children who are 3, 4, and 5 years of age. And if we want these girls and boys to go into the regular public school class and to be competitive, we need to give them a good head start. Our school has really embraced that challenge. We have just finished the construction of a $20 million early childhood center. And in this center, we will accept both youngsters who have multiple disabilities and those with a single disability of blindness. For the youngsters who really are following a pre-academic program, when they transition to first grade, we will give them the support that's necessary so that they can move into their local public school system. For the 3 or 4 years that they spend with us, they will get pre-Braille instruction, orientation, and mobility. In fact, now we have one little girl who's a great little cane traveler at age 4, and she's really an inspiration to see because she's so good at it. So I really see that as being a viable and important role for a school such as ours with a really focused program. The second thing that I think we ought to acknowledge is the fact that even though blind children have been in public schools forever, when the media has a question about blind education, they come to the school for the blind. And this has been my experience for the last 25 years. The newspapers, the radio stations, and the television stations come to us for information. And so I think it's very incumbent on us to give a clear message and to talk about the continuum and to be advocates for all students who are blind, both those who are part of our own schools as well as those who are being educated in other places in the public sector. So I think all schools for the blind really have the challenge of becoming good communicators and telling a clear, concise story that the public can understand.
Janet, I think you're right about that. I think, Bernadette, you wouldn't disagree at all with what Janet just said.
I would agree. One thing that I thought about when Janet was speaking, maybe some of you are aware of this, but the National Association of State Directors of Special Education and the Council of Schools for the Blind It's made up of about 45 schools for the blind around the United States joined together 3 years ago to develop a training module that we took around the country to special ed directors to tell them about IDEA and the specialized services that children that are blind and visually impaired need. And I think that was really a great thing for that cooperation, and that would be something that I'd encourage you to always think about, how we can go along with other groups. And my learnings from that, I did about 6 of those trainings in different states. The people that we meet with, the state directors of special education, they basically are interested in children that are blind and visually impaired. They want to do a good job, but their real issues are where do they get the staff? You go to states like South Dakota, where there are very few people, and people aren't moving in there to be teachers of the visually impaired, that sometimes the services are not exactly what they would like because of the lack of personnel. But I think if we can get out there and help people understand. For example, I was at a training and someone asked, how often should a child be taught Braille if they were in the second grade? I said, well, how often do you do that now? And she said, well, you have to understand the teacher comes once a week. I said, well, really, we'd be looking at every day. Well, that's not possible. I said, well, look at it this way. If you have a child, let's open the door to that first grade classroom and you say, okay, Samantha, you're going to step out of the room for the year and not have reading when the rest of the students have reading. What parent do you think would tolerate that? That's what we're talking about for children that are blind and visually impaired. Braille is their method of learning to read. And you could see like a bubble, aha, that they got it and they understand it when you can bring it down. I think we have to go out there, and even though IDEA has been around for a long time, we need to educate, and have it on a grassroots, basic level that people can understand.
I don't think you're going to get any argument from any members of this panel. We don't have a lot of time, and we could go on and talk about that, but I wanted to talk some about transition, going to the other end of the spectrum, the transition from school to work. I know at Overbrook we work hard at the transition program. Who wants to start to discuss that whole issue of getting our students prepared for the world of work?
Right now, under IDEA, kids as of age 14 are to receive transition services and do transition planning with parents on their child's future. And I want to bring up a point of also which helps support the continuum is that a child, we've seen success with children who are going to the public school, be able to take advantage of the schools for the blind as resources. We see a lot of that where kids who are mainstreamed are able to be integrated but have specialized training and services at camps or summer programs, school-to-work programs, where they are able to gain work experience, to get a lot of work experience. I know with our families, with our kids, we do the same as we do with our other kids as far as to try to encourage them to have as much exposure to different types of careers and opportunities. And exposing them to, you know, there's a lot of new technology, what's out there, being connected with the national resources of technology. There are some great national programs, Career Connect with AFB. There's, I know the Schools for the Blind, in particular, Perkins School for the Blind, they have a great school-to-work 5-week program in the summer. So there are ways to be creative and to access resources.
And I think, once again, just to reiterate, when families are helping their children start to make career choices, as when I'm speaking to parents of children that are visually impaired, one thing comes over and over again, which is you need to be proactive. You need to start thinking about it earlier than you would with a typically developing child. You have to look at these children's gifts and strengths and say, okay, what can this kid do? And then start a real strong proactive plan in putting that in place so he can be competitively employed. I would say personally, my biggest dream for my child is that he'll pay real taxes and not be system dependent. And I really then challenge also everybody in this room to be, you are the role models that I would like my son to emulate. And really, it would be great for parents. Oftentimes, as I said, I work in the early childhood program. When you're a parent of a 3 or a 4 year old, it's very hard to think of your poor little disabled child being employed someday. So I really look at us being collaborative and seeing how well that can work.
Janet, how are you meeting that challenge with transition?
Well, I would say that I think education of the blind and visually impaired, whether it be in the public sector or in schools for the blind, have not been as successful as we should be in terms of career preparation. Far too many of our graduates do not have opportunities to work, and far too many are underemployed in terms of their potential. It's a tremendous challenge, and I think it's not only what we do in instructionally to support students, but again, it comes to community awareness that we need to have more collaborations with businesses and industries that are willing to give our students a chance to demonstrate their skills. So if you look at challenges that face us in the 21st century, I think that transition is probably the greatest challenge that we're looking at. And just to make sure that future generations of blind and visually impaired children have opportunities to work and opportunities to enjoy the work that they're doing.
This is good. And just to wrap up, I think we've sort of said this already, but maybe to kind of summarize, those of us that are members of ACB and consumers, what can we do collectively to support the kinds of things, the white paper we have written, and the Education Committee worked very hard on that, that's out there, as you know, for talking discussions and so on. What would you recommend that we as ACB members be doing to support all of your efforts?
I'd like to speak on that. We would love to work collaboratively with ACB to invite them to be a part of our national convention that's going to be in Orlando next July. We would like to have ACB invite the Florida affiliate to come to our national convention that will be held there, and to invite parents that you know in the area. We also have a strong NAPFE affiliate in Florida. We think it's important, like Jeanne had said, to have our parents have exposure to successful adult role models, and I talked to some of the student alliance group with ACB, and they want to do some mentoring with our kids. The high school and college kids would love to work together with the NAPFE families. We want to see more we've done a great job with collaborating on the national level. More than ever, I feel this during this reauthorization of IDEA, has NAPFE as a national organization collaborated and been a part with AER and ACB, AFB, addressing some of our national issues. I'd like to see us do more of that, and also in building statewide advocacy efforts with our organizations cooperating together.
A couple of things I was thinking about where you could really be helpful to us would be knowing about the population of students that are out there. As I mentioned, there is a changing population of students, and as Janet mentioned, transition and preparation for adult life is a challenge, and we need to think about those students who may not be the typical learners, but who really do want to work and have skills that can be productive. And I think back to that recent reauthorization with RSA, where some of the rules were changed for people that are more challenging. I would really advocate and push that your voices are heard when those things happen, that you think about all the children that are out there and people that need to work, so that the voices of all blind people are heard, and it's not a confused message among the consumers what's wanted, and that a certain voice is pushed forth, and then all of the people in the world, in our world, that need services get pushed behind. And I really see that as something that's critical. Choice is important for children and their families, and not to be pushed in one direction and told that this is the way that every blind person should act. Blind people should have choices.
Thank Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can see that we have really assembled here a panel that is thinking and has given us a lot to work on and a lot to think about this morning. I'm sorry we do not have time for questions for these people. They'll be here at the break to meet with anybody that has any questions about that. And I want to thank Bernadette and Janet and Jean Ann and Susan for being here this morning. They're all my friends, and they're all friends of ACB. Let's have a nice, warm welcome for them. And right now, I'll return control of the meeting to MJ Schmidt.
What a great panel. I sure agree with Bernadette about kids having note takers and get hand carried all over school. And when I was scholarship chair, we used to sort of mark those kids down. I think that we need to acknowledge our education committee, chaired by Sue Crawford, and with all the work that Paul Edwards and the rest of the committee put into the educational white paper. It's the best thing I've seen come out of ACB in a long, long time. And isn't it nice that so many of our ideas are going forth into the new IDEA legislation? So, you know, we're really getting some stuff done, folks. To discuss IDEA reauthorization, we'll go to an expert, and we all know what an expert is. The executive director of the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind, my friend, your friend, our friend. I'm sorry you're going to get on a little late, but you can talk fast. Join me in welcoming Mark Reichert.
As always, it is an honor to make this kind of a presentation before the most caring and committed organization of blind men and women anywhere. The Mark Twain has a wonderful quote that the human race delights in pursuing asininity as a career. And when you talk about legislation and what the Congress is up to, I suppose you can't lose sight of that. That having been said, I think MJ is absolutely right. Thanks to the leadership of this organization and others, we are starting to see some language being included in legislation that will, I think, fundamentally begin to address some of the needs and concerns that you've heard your outstanding panelists talk about here a few minutes ago. Let me try to address what our field has put forward as our agenda, why we've put it forward, and frankly, what kind of success we've had. In doing that, I need to again echo that acknowledgement that MJ gave to our education committee, and it's been a privilege for me to serve with that group. We AER, about a year and a half ago or so, pulled together a group of organizations, about 12 in number, including ACB and others in the blindness field, and organizations representing children with other sensory disabilities, deafness and deafblindness particularly. This organization, or this coalition known as the Sensory Disabilities Roundtable, includes all of the in its recommendations, includes all of the language which ACB developed, and you can be proud of the coalition building that this organization has been involved in. What are those three particular issues that we've been trying to push? The first, I suppose, of most significant interest for this assembly is language that would guarantee equal access to instructional materials and technology. Imagine a world if you will, for just a moment, where a blind or visually impaired child shows up to the first day of school and a textbook, required textbook, is available for that child on that first day. Imagine, if you will, a world in which producers of accessible instructional materials would be able to obtain a file, an electronic copy of the textbook, in a standardized format that is effectively ready-made for conversion into a variety of formats. Braille, yes, absolutely, 110%, large print. Digital audio and other formats that are so important to us. Imagine that that standardized file would be available from a central location for free. That is the world that we have proposed to try to create with Congress's help. As is the case with so much of the agenda that we've been proposing, and frankly, as is the case with so much of the agenda that the wider disability community has proposed, the United States House of Representatives, by and large, said, yeah, that's an okay idea. They did include a couple of paragraphs related to our issues in the House bill. But frankly, the lack of precision of those paragraphs makes the creation of that vision or that dream very, very difficult. The United States House the United States Senate, on the other hand, did include, frankly, all of those provisions from what you all have come to recognize as the Instructional Materials Accessibility Act, including this centralized repository for the availability and transmission of files. That is an outstanding accomplishment. That legislation has yet to be formally adopted by the full body. There's no real reason to expect that the language, which is now currently in a committee-reported bill, will remove itself. The real challenge is going to be whether or not that language, as we have developed it, will survive in the conference committee. And frankly, and this is when I talk about pursuing as an entity, as a career, this is what I think about. We've already been told by a couple of key House staff that they intend to, quote-unquote, crush the repository when it gets to the conference. So your advocacy, your continued involvement in coalitioning, your willingness when you receive an email alert from your director of advocacy, Melanie Brunson, to pick up a phone and call is absolutely, absolutely critical. And, you know, we wouldn't have had that language included in the Senate but for the involvement of folks like you. Don't ever let anybody tell you, or don't ever doubt for a moment, that your involvement doesn't make a difference. It absolutely was key to including the language we've put forward in the Senate bill. The other two principal areas we've been focusing on are these. And you've heard a little bit about this in the panel earlier today. We are facing a remarkable shortage of personnel. People who've worked in this field for 30 years joke with me when they're not weeping about this, that we've been talking about a personnel shortage in this field forever. That's absolutely true. I suppose the one critical difference is, though, that all of those folks who talk about that critical personnel shortage are probably going to retire within 10 years. We are facing a remarkable crisis in the availability of people to provide services to our kids. So the solution, which is complicated and multivariate, must include one proposal which we have put forward to Congress, which frankly has not been pushed by or adopted rather by either the House or the Senate. And that proposal would more effectively target dollars that are currently available under the so-called personnel preparation provisions of IDEA to programs that train personnel who work with blind and visually impaired kids. just to give you one statistic that should hopefully paint the picture for you, and we can thank the American Foundation for the Blind and other organizations to help us pull these statistics together. There are something like 6,700 teachers, roughly speaking, available to provide services, specialized services to blind and visually impaired kids. And based on the population of kids nationally, we need an additional 5,000 teachers today to meet demand. How many are we preparing each year? Depending on who you talk to, between 250 and 300. It is remarkable. The orientation to mobility category is even more stark. I think the statistics that we're now talking about indicate that something like less than 2,000 orientation and mobility professionals are currently available to meet the demand or to meet the need that's out there. And based on the statistics, we probably need about 10,000 additional O&M specialists. When you tell those statistics to a member of Congress or his or her staff, the response is frankly, to throw up their hands and say, this problem is so large, you know, we're not even going to be able to begin to make a dent. And quite frankly, I think that's our biggest challenge with this issue and why we haven't been able to advance this agenda as much as we have in some other areas. The problem is so large that people often respond with a sense of helplessness up there. But we're going to continue to work, and we'll see what happens over the next weeks and months to try to push this. Finally, that third issue, which is so critically important to all of us, this business of trying to do something about people quoting philosophy to us about the education of our kids instead of focusing on what services do our kids need and where are those services available? IDEA has for many years put a great focus on the so-called least restrictive environment, as you've heard today. It does not, however, have, in our view, an appropriate accent on the need for services that are available in settings other than the neighborhood school. And it's frankly obnoxious to have meetings with other folks, some from the cross disability so-called community, some from die-hard members of Congress who have been around in the IDEA battles for decades, who say that this philosophy or this emphasis on least restrictive environment trumps the need to focus on providing services to kids, because those services might happen to be available in a setting other than the neighborhood school. It's you'd be amazed, or perhaps you wouldn't, about those kind of the reactions that we often get. We are proposing language that would specifically add the continuum, that range of available services, to IDEA, the statute itself. This is absolutely critical to continue to push. Because right now, though current federal regulations, not the statute, but the regulations, though the regulations honor, in principle, the continuum, those regulations were written 5 years ago by a Department of Education that was put together under a previous administration, and which, frankly, in comparison to the current regime, is one which was certainly a lot friendlier or more open to the consensus of our field in recognizing the importance of the continuum. So we need to continue to push for the inclusion of the continuum in the statute itself, so that as regulations are adopted in the next years to implement this rendition of IDEA, that continuum will be protected. Let me just close then by clarifying something I said earlier. We did get a couple of little paragraphs on the instructional materials language in the House bill. They're a bit scrambled, and certainly the Senate language is much, much preferable. And again, thank you for your help with that. But by and large, we got majorly dissed, to put the technical term on it, as did the rest of the disability community in the House bill. It is a frightening piece of legislation in many ways for what it does to repeal or roll back protections that parents have and means that parents have to protect the rights of their kids. The Senate bill moderates some of those. I mean, I'm glossing a lot of material here, okay? But you get the general gist. And our language that deals with the instructional materials accessibility issues, as well as language which will finally, for the first time, build in the so-called expanded core curriculum, or socialization and independent living skills, orientation and mobility training, training in the use of assistive technology devices, including low vision devices. That language is now part in the Senate bill of provisions related to what IEPs need to, and why IEP teams need to consider. That language is all contained in a Senate bill which is making its way through the process. And ladies and gents, there is going to be a catfight among catfights in the conference committee that's coming up. And frankly, that repository issue, that central location for files, will be one an issue that is so small in comparison to these larger issues of the disciplining of kids with different disabilities and civil rights protections and what have you. And wow, is it going to be very, very tough. And to some extent, our language is going to be held hostage by that political process, which only is a hopefully not too pessimistic way of saying your help is going to be absolutely essential. So when you hear from Melanie, or you hear from folks at AFB, or from yours truly, or whomever, you need to pick up the phone or be involved or be willing perhaps to come to Washington to help us, please do it. It has absolutely made a difference up till now throughout this process. It will be decisive in the weeks and months to come. Thank you so much for having me, and God bless your work.
Thank you, Mark. I think we needed that reality check. We're just going to have to... We get these emails and get on the phone and sit down at our computer or our typewriter or something and get the job done. We're going to break, but before we do, I'd like to announce that a briefcase with a cell phone attached to it was found on the shuttle, and its owner probably should go to the information desk and get it back. Now we're going to break. Well, we're going to have door prizes when you come back, and the first one's going to be a $50 door prize. So get yourselves back here by 10:45. Thank you.
Good to see MJ, as always.
Good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. A little bit under the weather, having been up for the last, whatever, 2 or 3 nights. No reason for that.
I went to Best last night.
Congratulations.
And I never do that.
But I know you don't.
But I am getting older.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it says 10:30 in the schedule.
Great 10:15.
And then what's it say?
Programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud supporter of ACB Radio.
Blind like me, take one.
Hi, everybody. This is Phil Parr inviting you to come and join us for our new show called Blind Like Me. You know about those famous blind people like Ray Charles and Ronnie Millsap and Eric Weinmayer, Jim Snowbarger.
How'd his name get on the list?
I have absolutely no idea. Anyway, you've heard of those blind people, but there are a lot of blind people you've never heard of who do unusual things or have unusual skills. Well, we're going to try to talk to as many of those people as we can. We'll have a cooking show once a month with Dale Campbell. We'll have Don Shaw giving us some websites that are screen reader friendly, some websites that you can navigate. And we'll have input on the show from you. We'll have a special email address that you can send your correspondence to. If you know somebody who would be good for the show, if you'd like to Be on the show yourself. Well, email us. That'll start July 18th, immediately following The Blind Handyman, which is also moving to Friday night. So come and join us. We'd love to have you. Blind Like Me, starting July 18th over most of this ACB radio station.
The American Foundation for the Blind is proud to support ACB Radio. Visit AFB's online bookstore at www.afb.org to order Deborah Kendrick's newest title in the Jobs That Matter series.
ACB Radio.
And here on ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to live coverage of the 42nd Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind, coming to you from Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center, where we're all having a ball. It is now 23 past 10 Eastern Time, so we're due to convene quite soon. And let's tell you what you can expect for the remainder of the morning before we get to some of your comments that we've received during that first session. At 10:30 this morning, continuing really with the education theme, we hear about the ACB scholarship winners. The scholarships are presented for 2003. Over the years, there's been an increasing number of scholarships that the American Council of the Blind makes available. And you'll hear the people who have been successful and are doing some inspiring things. Patty Slaby will present them from River Falls in Wisconsin. And you'll hear the voices of a lot of the winners. Following that, transitioning from education to employment, critical issue, and we'll hear about it with Dr. Robert Carter of College Station in Texas, that's right. And at about 11:50, we'll have some announcements and then we'll wrap up for the day. I'm sure there will be a massive clamour for some more door prizes because we didn't get to any in the last session. If you'd like to get in touch with us, then the email and MSN instant messenger address is convention@acbradio.org. That's convention@acbradio.org. All you have to do is add that to your contact list in MSN Messenger and you can get to have a chat with us. Now, I'll make this announcement again because we keep getting inquiries. Obviously, people keep missing it and that's fine. Ray Washburn is the last person to ask. Are we broadcasting the Friends in Art Showcase? No, not this year, because it's in a different room from the one in which the convention broadcasts are coming from. That's unusual because generally the convention sessions and the performing arts showcase are in the same room, which makes it easy to stream. We are unable to do that this year. But once the exhibits are finished, we should be able to do some streaming from the Western, and tentatively we hope that will include the gala night tomorrow night, launching People of Vision, a history of the American Council of the Blind, which is available right now from the ACB store. It may well include the candidates forum and the banquet, so we'll keep you posted on that. Let's see, now we've heard from Michelle Cheney. She's in New Jersey and enjoying listening to the coverage of the American Council of the Blind's convention, and she says that LaBelle School for the Blind in New York is going to be celebrating its 100th anniversary in the fall of 2004. If you are alumni of that school and you would like to hear more, to get more information about it, then you can send your name and address and other contact information to msc732@aol.com. That's MSC, as in Mike Sierra Charlie, 732@AOL.com for that reunion, which is a celebration, which is taking place in the fall of 2004. Now, we have been mentioning during these breaks some of the exhibits that you can see. And the exhibit hall opens again at 11 o'clock and will continue till 6 today. And ACB Radio Interactive will be broadcasting live from there. So you can head on over to interactive.acbradio.org and soak up the atmosphere of the exhibits. Some of the other exhibitors that we haven't mentioned yet, Alva Access Group. They are here this year with a prototype of their MPO. That's the mobile phone organizer, and we talked about that on Main Menu a couple of weeks ago. This is the device that has a braille display and a port that you plug a kind of a microphone headset unit into, and inside the unit is a tri-band GSM cell phone. And because of the Braille display, which also offers features like note-taking and a planner, and it runs under CE, so it uses active sync to synchronize content, etc. You can see the caller ID information in the directory, and it's an interesting device. So Alvara here. Repro Attronics. Don't know what they do. Do you know what they do, Mike?
No. Who is that?
This is Repro, and then I think it's an at sign. Tronics. Oh, what do they do?
I'm not sure.
Someone.
I don't know.
Oh, okay, tactile graphics. Oh, very much. Thank you for that, Frank. It's amazing who you see popping out of the woodwork, isn't it? So they are here with their tactile graphics. I'm advised very advisedly. Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, of course, are here as usual, and they've got some interesting stuff, including rolling out their DAISY-compatible books. Sighted Electronics. Now, they're the laptop people, right? I think that's what they are. Yeah. They've got a new version of the laptop here with a faster processor and all sorts of good stuff. The Lutheran Braille Workers Incorporated here once again, as is the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Guess it might be Judy who's there. Vertouch Limited. They're here too. And Visuaid. We have featured some Visuaid products recently on Main Menu. They do the Trekker system, which runs under a PDA type device and offers GPS functionality, and they also have that very cool Victor Reader series, including the Victor Reader software, which you can purchase to read DAISY books, both spoken word and DAISY books that are marked up with just text. Kurzweil Educational Systems are here once again. I don't know whether they're displaying anything new at this show or not, but they certainly have product in the works. The National Braille Press, with their range of products, they've just released something that may be of interest to some of our techie friends. That is the SoundForge and Goldwave and Cool Edit reference card, an audio editor's reference card. So that's available for purchase here, along with a whole lot of books. Of course, they've got their wonderful Children's Book of the Month Club and a whole lot of other stuff. Envision is here, the American Foundation for the Blind. Pulse Data Humanware is here. They are showing version 5.0 of Keysoft, which we've also talked about on Main Menu. One of the things about Main Menu, of course, is it takes half the fun out of coming to the exhibits because you've heard most of it. I guess I won't have that problem for much longer. So version 5 of Keysoft is here. That includes the MP3 player, which was demonstrated at the BrailleNote users group meeting last night. That was very ably facilitated by Marlena Lieberg, and she demonstrated the MP3 player playing an audio book and music and a range of other things. It has a stopwatch in version 5, synchronization with Outlook, and they've introduced the Duxbury Braille Translator into the BrailleNote with their version 5 software. Beyond Sight, I'm pretty sure that might be actually the laptop people, I don't know. It's all getting confused. All the sighted stuff. Wagner Products, they're here too, and Freedom Vision. The Council of the United States Dog Guide Schools are here. The U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now that's interesting. I have to go to the booth and find out what they're doing. IBM with their products such as Homepage Reader. Matilda Ziegler Magazine, that magazine that has been going for so long now, with a range of interesting articles. They are here too in a booth. Diebold, the ATM people, they have some technology that they are showing in booth number 54 at the exhibits. The Oklahoma League for the Blind are here. Visu Plus Technologies. There are a few names that are unfamiliar to me. Palara Engineering is another one. Novax Industries. Talking Solutions. Z-Form, which have just renamed to All in Play. They have their poker game out that really has quite a following in the blind community. And at this convention, they're demonstrating their latest offering, which is the Crazy Eights card game. So that's Z-Form, now renamed All in Play. The Dry Dock is here. Ethel Bender. Horizons for the Blind Incorporated. And Seedlings Braille Books for Children. It's another excellent resource for kids. Millennium Compliance Corporation. Gosh, what do they do now? Go and have a look at that. Quiet Water Designs are here. Bender Consulting Services Incorporated. The International Association of Audio Information Services. Are you still on? Oh, Mike's not here, but I think here, he might. You still on their board, are you?
Yes.
The IAAIS?
No, I'm not on the IAAIS
board. Oh, okay.
I'm on a committee. On the Government Relations Committee.
Right, okay.
And hence that appointment to the FCC Consumer Advisory Council.
Right. You were on their board, though, weren't you?
I was on the board for 6 years.
Right.
And then previously for 4 years as second vice president.
Okay. So they've got a booth here this year.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the IAAIS. Christensen Design is here as well. And Star Continuous Cards. What an interesting concept. Some great little gifts that you can pick up from the exhibit hall, you know, if you don't want to splash out and buy an expensive piece of technology. At First Sight, National Statler Center for Careers in Hospitality Service. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'll be back.
Friends in Art, they have their CDs. For example, they're selling a CD of some material from the Showcase of Talent, and it's really worth picking those up because I know that people are disappointed that due to technical issues we can't bring you that this evening live, but even when we have, they do such a cool job of mixing their CDs and making a professional job of putting them together, so it's great. Now, right next to Friends and Art, and this makes perfect sense, is the Dancing Dots people. In recent times, of course, they were known for some time for the Goodfeel Braille Translator, the whole area of translating music, but also they're doing the Cake Talking scripts for Jaws, which really create an alternative user environment, user interface for Jaws for Windows in interaction with Cakewalk, and now I think Sonar. The Golden Triangle Council of the Blind are here, and the Pennsylvania Council of the Blind are here. They've got some very nice gifts that you can take away from this convention as a memento of Pittsburgh and the festivities here. They have some very nice kind of golf shirts with the ACB logo and the Pennsylvania Council of the Blind and writing that reminds you that you were here. And they've got umbrellas as well, and you need them in Pittsburgh, man. Somebody told me yesterday that Pittsburgh has some of the highest rainfall in the country, and I certainly wouldn't want to unduly denigrate Pittsburgh, and I haven't been able to independently verify this from any reliable source, but it has rained a lot, and there's been some awesome thunder. Quite a lot. I think we're going for a high of 86 degrees today, so it's a little warmer than yesterday, but it's been quite mild. If you need a new cane, California Canes are here in the exhibit hall as well, and it sounds like second vice president MJ Schmidt is about to call the convention back to order. If you want to get in touch with us during proceedings, remember convention@acbradio.org is the address.
I have a scholarship kid in here.
I need to find out where the
scholarship kids.
I'm trying to see where they are now. Maybe we should just say that if all the scholarship winners come forward.
Yeah. Would all the scholarship winners... Wait a minute. Just a minute.
Okay, here's...
MJ.
What?
We just put them all down here to the front. They're about to come up on the stage. Can you hold, like, 90 seconds while we get them up here?
Oh, we can do door prizes.
Perfect.
Okay, now that we've got it all down to a dull roar. I understand that the chair of the Arrangements Committee, Gene Barton, it has the door prizes. So, Gene, take it away. We need you.
They need you, Mike.
Okay, I'm Bill Newland filling in for the vacationing Gene Barton. First door prize, as promised, $50 from the California Council. And the name out of the bag is?
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Dorothy Fritz, Orland, Pennsylvania.
Is she here? Goody.
Okay, the next prize is Tupperware, bowls, and a catalog.
To your left.
And it says from Linda Yax, is that it? And we believe it's from donated by the Colorado Council?
Denver's Finest.
Denver's Finest, okay.
Sure.
Howard Fink, Brooklyn, New York.
All right, Howie.
$30 gift certificate from Radio Shack, donated by Jim Manny.
Belva Franzen, West Jordan, Utah.
Okay. Is she here?
Is she here?
Hear anything.
I can't hear up here. Is she here?
What'd they say? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll pull it. Is she here?
We'll pull another one.
Belva. All right. Okay, she's here. She just told me. Maybe one more?
One more?
One more, please.
All right.
There you go. It's this one.
Some of the people have turned off the microphones. Please do not turn off the microphones. We taped them yesterday. Apparently somebody took the tape off. Don't turn them off, okay?
We didn't turn them off. We just couldn't get it turned on. Next, we have a portfolio and paperclip holder donated by U.S. Steel. And inside is a subscription to Newsreel.
Ooh.
I'll say that's donated by, but...
Kathy Gallagher, Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay. Is Kathy here? Huh? Oh, okay. So she's working at the convention, so. Oh, she's way in the back. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Ray Campbell, Chair of Constitution and Bylaws. I just wanted to announce to everyone...
I know you.
That you know me. I just wanted to announce to everyone that I ran across the skywalk and back to the Communication Center. And I am told the amendments in Braille and large print will be ready after the session today out at the information desk.
Good show.
They were printing them as I was there.
Good
show. Thank you very much.
I would like to announce... at the request of Susan LaVenture, that any parents who would like to meet with the NAPFE people and talk a little bit about education should gather at the end of this session at the NAPFI booth, which is booth 86, and then we're just going to go to a concession area and get some food and sit down and chat at lunch. So anybody who'd like to participate in that, come. And remember, get your tickets for the gala, and y'all come tomorrow night. Now it's my distinct pleasure to introduce to you the chair of our scholarship committee, who was on this committee light years ago when I was its chair, and who did a fine job then and is doing an excellent job now. I give you Patty Slobby.
Good morning. We have a fine group of young people up here on stage. To begin with, I would like to recognize my hardworking committee, and it's more than a couple of weeks out of the year that we work, but their results are the most exciting when we arrive at the convention and get to actually spend time. This has been a very cohesive group. We got them together Saturday night, and I don't think they've quit talking since.
They both want to make a special.
Okay. Before we begin, I'm going to let the one representative from Kurzweil Educational System speak for a minute or so, and then a member, a representative from Freedom Scientific will also speak. They are giving, in addition to the scholarship awards, they will also be receiving software and vouchers from these two companies.
Good morning. All week at the booth, we've been giving mints away to people at the convention, and we want to just remind you that we actually do reading software. So today, it's a real pleasure to give to the scholarship winners of ACB a copy of the Kurzweil 1000 way back in the not quite real dark ages, but sort of dark ages. In 1984, I was trained on this great big huge machine, and I used it in college for all kinds of good things, and I hope these students will also. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Sharon from Freedom Scientific.
Thank you. Good morning. Well, on behalf of Freedom Scientific, we are just delighted to be here at the convention and delighted to be able to participate with the scholarship award winners. We just want to congratulate everyone, all the scholarship winners, and in particular those who will be receiving the awards from Freedom Scientific. Freedom, of course, our mission is to provide the tools that allow you all to do whatever you choose to do. And so we are just excited that these great winners are going to have the opportunity to use our tools to really achieve great heights. And I know they're going to do great things. So congratulations to everyone.
Thank you to both of them. We'll begin by recognizing my committee members, and if they're in the audience, they may please rise so we can recognize them. On our vocational subcommittee, we have Gail Krause from Florida. We have Denise Colley from Washington, and you'll have to pardon me. I lent my slate to someone yesterday, and I haven't received it back yet. So if I miss anybody of my committee, please do not feel bad. The other one is Druding from Arizona. On our entering freshman committee, we have Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker, California, Valerie Stannard, Missouri. Who's my other one? And Gilly Presley from Alabama. On our undergraduate committee, we have Shelley Hart from South Dakota. We have, Michael Gravett from Pennsylvania, and Tom Torvey from Alaska. That committee has a challenge when getting Eastern time interviews with Alaska time. It's sort of like communicating between Europe. On our graduate committee, we have Michael Garrett, Texas, Don Kors, Indiana, and Patsy Jones, South Carolina. Because it is our history year this year, I have chose three of the scholarships and what they mean or how they were developed. And beginning with the Floyd Qualls one, because that was how the scholarship program began. And I believe MJ had something to do with it at that point. So the Floyd Qualls Memorial Scholarship was established in the early 1980s, and the board of directors, following Mr. Qualls' death, decided as a memorial to him and his work in the blindness field to provide funds that were solicited from members and friends to establish the endowment fund. Additional funds keep coming in, which are received and are being received as we go through the continuation of the scholarships. So in noting that, we will begin with the vocational winners this year in the Floyd Qualls. You'll notice that this year we have four, one in each category. And our first one is a young lady who will be attending the Blue River College in Independence, Missouri, majoring in mass communications with her focus being on advertising and broadcasting. I would like to introduce you to Kate Lovelace.
Good morning. I come to you from the Show Me State of Kansas City, Missouri. It's quite an honor for me to be speaking before you today, and I would like to thank the Scholarship Committee for selecting me to be here to receive this honor. I also want to thank all of you, everyone who has anything to do with the American Council for the Blind. It's because of your hard work and dedication that we are able to survive as a blind community in a sighted world. George Wells once said, "Never underestimate the." Sorry, guide dog. Never underestimate the power of doing well by doing good. And the ACB is the epitome of that. Thank you so much for all you do, and God bless.
Our next winner is Michael Bofenkamp, and he's another Floyd Qualls winner. He will be attending Amarillo College, and he'll be majoring in political science as an entering freshman. Michael was unable to be with us this year. Moving on to our undergraduate committee, their selection includes Rebecca Hudson. She is interning at the National Office for the summer, and she was overheard the other day to say that she might not even return to Indiana. She likes D.C. too much. But at this point, she plans to be a junior at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. She's majoring in musical arts and communications. Rebecca.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very honored to have received the Floyd Qualls Scholarship and to have had the opportunity to attend convention. Normally the interns have to stay at the national office, but I got really lucky and begged for mercy and was able to attend the convention. This is my first one, and I'm having a wonderful time, and I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge, to thank the undergraduate committee, Mike and Shelley and Tom, for chasing me down for my interview. I don't know about the rest of the scholarship winners, but I know I was pretty hard to get a hold of. So thanks for being patient. And thank you to Patricia and Terry in the national office, who have worked very hard and done a lot with the committee. And, of course, Patty, the chair. It's been a lot of fun, and thanks for getting us all together. And to the ACB, all of you who are members and friends, I can't tell you how grateful I am to have had the opportunity to attend my first convention and be here with all of you. And thank you for all your support and all you do for ACB.
And James is right there.
Our graduate recipient, Lisa Bechert, is going to be, she's majoring in biomedical engineering at the University of Missouri in Columbia. And when I called Lisa to give her some arrangement plans and try to answer some questions, she was in the hospital. And when she got here, she asked if she made any sense when she talked to me. So I got some secrets I don't know if I'll share. Lisa?
Great. Good morning, everyone. I am so honored to be here. It's been a wonderful experience so far. I would like to thank all of the scholarship committee members that took the time to consider my application and give me the interviews and then make the selection. I would also like to thank everyone that I've met that has been kind and helpful here at the convention, as this is my first convention. I would also like to thank all the ACB members that support the scholarships to make these possible. Awards like this give you the determination to continue on, especially in a field that is pretty difficult at times and requires a lot of perseverance. Thank you so much.
Our next winner will be receiving the Nicholas DiCaprio Scholarship, which is awarded to someone until they are finished with school or graduate with within a certain number of years. That one's being redesigned at the moment we're speaking. But this year, the recipient is Mary Rogers. She's just moved to Boston to attend the University of Massachusetts at Boston. And she will be studying rehabilitation services in counseling and doing a minor in psychology. What a busy lady.
Good morning. I'd like to thank the members of ACB who continue to support the scholarships, the scholarship committees, and especially the DiCaprio family for establishing this scholarship. I am very honored to receive it and hope to complete my master's in rehab counseling and school counseling in that 3-year period. Thank you.
I have to say, when I called her to tell her that she won, I think all of the East Coast heard her. The Dr. Mae Davidoll Award is going to Allison Mervis, who will be attending Chatham College right here in Pittsburgh. She is going to be seeking a degree in counseling as well. Allison.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to thank you all for coming. There are many, many people that I feel deserve thanks, first and foremost being the founders of this scholarship, secondly being the scholarship committee who sought fit to bestow this honor on me. I will try my very best to be worthy of such an honor. And I also want to thank all the members of the ACB and all the wonderful volunteers who are here. This is my very first convention, and I admit when I came here I was a bit nervous, but now it feels like I'm just a part of a really big family, and I hope to continue being a part of that. Thank you all so very much, and God bless you all.
the William G. Corey Scholarship also goes to a lady that's going to school here in Pittsburgh. She will be going to the University of Pittsburgh. She's continuing her master's program in rehabilitation counseling. Catherine is a very ambitious person and loves to play the trumpet. Catherine? Oh, I'm sorry, Catherine Armstrong.
Thank you very much, everybody. I'm so grateful that actually this is my second scholarship, and I want to thank the scholarship committee not only for providing me with a scholarship last year, but trusting me again this year and providing another one. Michael, Garrett, and Patsy Jones, and Don Kors, all who interviewed me, thank you very much. And especially, though, thank you to the all of the membership of ACB for just being such an exciting, interesting, independent, productive group of people. It's just such a pleasure to be here and meet people who are really striving to overcome all that society thinks that we can't do. So I won't be too long, but thank you very much, ACB, and I will hope to use the money wisely.
For some of you who don't know, I'm an itinerant teacher of the visually impaired, and I work with one person I worked with, one of my peers said that unless you make 3 mistakes a day, you're not human. So I got the first one not taken care of already. Now we have a few scholarships that the attendees were not able to be here for some reason or other. The Kelly Cannon Award is going to a very interesting young man this year. Sina Brahm will be attending North Carolina University in Raleigh. He'll be majoring in computer science, and one of his hobbies is astrophysics. But the most interesting thing about Sina, he is still 16 and beginning at the beginning of September, and will be that way until October. So he is a very ambitious young man. Our next recipient will be Jeremy Johansson, and this scholarship was put together in the honor of Dr. S. Bradley Burson, and it's the Dr. S. Bradley Burson Memorial Science Scholarship. It is funded annually by Dr. Phyllis Burson, and it's to recognize students who are seeking a degree in the pure sciences. Some of these sciences include mathematics and chemistry, physics, and engineering. Jimmy has been a winner in the past and a well-deserving and hard-working young man. He's continuing his doctoral program at the University of California at Santa Barbara. And Jeremy is in Japan right now working on another project in the aerospace division. The next scholarship, which is the Delbert Allman Scholarship, will be awarded to Dawn Flellen, who is majoring in sociology and human services at Northern State University. That university is located in Aberdeen, and Dawn was not able to be with us this year. Our next winner comes through us from Bay State. The Bay State Council awards their scholarship to Jessica Barr. She will be an entering freshman, and she's attending right now and doing some summer classes at King State, majoring in French. Our next recipient is here. She comes from the ACB of Colorado to us, Paulette Foss. She's working on her PhD, majoring in cultural anthropology. She'll be working at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Here is Paulette Foss.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you. As an anthropologist, I suppose I can't get by without bringing in one culture or another.
In Japan, there are many ways of saying thank you, almost all of which say, I have an obligation which I cannot repay. I say that kind of thanks to all of ACB. All of you as individual members have supported all of us as scholarship students through your generosity so that we may attend the conferences, the scholarship committees who have worked hard to choose us. This is my second year, and I hope that the work I'm doing in my dissertation will help many people beyond just getting my degree, because I'm working with the issues of quality of life for folks with late life vision loss. We're all aging. Many of us here deal with vision loss, but there are many, many more people who are going to be dealing with this, and I'm hoping that some of the work I do will help make their lives easier, as you guys all jointly have helped make my life better. Thank you so much, everyone.
Now we move on to the Oregon Council of the Blind. Their first scholarship is being presented to Aaron Lurdson, who is a junior at Pacific University, and she is majoring in English. She has served as the editor of the NABS newsletter for the last year. Aaron is not able to be here this year. But the second recipient of the Oregon Council of the Blind has brought a young lady who will be attending Oregon State University in Eugene, Oregon, and she will be majoring in biology. Here is Megan Briggs.
Thank you to the Oregon Council for the Blind for providing this scholarship and the ability to continue and further my education. I have greatly enjoyed my high school education, and I am one of those strange kids that really loves school, so I know I'll look forward to college. I'd also like to thank the committee, because as I've been on many committees, I know how much work it is to put together something like this at such a grand scale, and how much work that you do, how many hours and late nights that there's been. I'd also like to thank all of the members of the ACB for allowing me to come and attend this amazing, inspirational convention that you have. There's no way that I would have been able to afford it otherwise, and it's been truly grand. In all aspects, and I find it inspirational to see everybody and find out that I'm not the only one that may be struggling with some issues, and you know, not the only kid that's grieving because she can't drive. You know, so thank you for that. And I'd also like to tell you where I'm going in the fall, University of Oregon, and I will be studying biology with an emphasis on genetics, because I believe that there are so many things that we can improve in this world, and I hope that that's one way that I can make a difference. I was also honored this year to give the commencement speech at my graduation, and there I used a quote that I'd like to share with you right now. Mark Twain once said that kindness is the language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. This is something that you have truly showed with me. Thank you.
Our next recipient is Michael Triplett. He is well known in the state of Arkansas, but this fall he will continue his education at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, and he's working on his master's degree toward rehabilitation of the blind, and his emphasis will be in teaching. Michael Triplett.
I find it a humbling honor to receive this scholarship, and there are many individuals that I would like to thank. First, I would like to thank God for blessing me with this privilege of receiving this scholarship. I would like to also thank those who worked behind the scenes to establish this scholarship, those of the scholarship committee who have worked so diligently many hours to select me to receive this scholarship. Going beyond that, those people who do and constantly provide support to me, my wife, Julie, my family, my immediate family and extended family, my family in ACB, that being my friends in the Arkansas Council, as well as those beyond. It is a real privilege to have received this scholarship. Thank you.
The Elma Murphy Memorial Scholarship will be going to Lisa Galdi. Lisa is majoring in counseling and psychology as a doctoral student at Furun University. Lisa is extremely excited to be here.
This is true. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Patty. I'd like to thank the members of the Scholarship Committee, Don, Michael, and Patsy. It was thrilling for me to have the interview, and I'm so appreciative that you folks elected me. And as Patty said, I'm so excited to be here. Meeting everyone is an awesome experience, and it's so motivational. I'm a psychology intern at the VA in Montrose, New York, and it's been an amazing learning experience. I'll be working on my dissertation soon. It will be on learning accessible classes for graduate students who are blind and visually impaired. So I'm looking forward to working on that one. I would like to thank the Braille Revival League of Missouri. I am so appreciative of the Alma Murphy Scholarship. I've been told she was a wonderful woman who made a lot of positive contributions. In closing, I'd like to share a phrase with you that is applicable to the ACB. You are the pride of America. Thank you. God bless you.
The NIB Grant Mack Memorial Scholarship is funded annually. And we chose this one because it's an honor to Grant Mack, who was both a former president of ACB and a past chairperson of the NIB Board of Directors. And it's given in recognition of leadership ability and works to promote the lives of blind people. Our recipient this year, Gene Hermanson, who will be a junior at the University of Montana in Missoula, will be majoring in finance. He's also working with a senator in Washington, D.C. this summer. Gene.
Thank you. I would like to thank the ACB, the Scholarship Committee, of course, and all the members of the ACB who help make these scholarships possible. Also, I'd like to thank the National Industries for the Blind, who also made this scholarship available and to help support my education. I'd like to thank Kathy Gallagher of the NIB, who showed me around the office in D.C. and introduced me to Jim Gibson. And this is my second ACB convention, and I'm looking forward to attending others. Thank you.
The Arnold Sadler Scholarship is being awarded to Angela Howard. She is a first-year master's student at the University of Texas at Austin. She's working on a dual master's in social work and public policy. Angela was unable to be with us this year. The Eunice Fiorito Scholarship is awarded to Christy Gilson. She's a PhD student majoring in special education and would like to teach at the college level. She is currently attending college at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Christy.
Good morning.
I am simply delighted to be at the ACB convention. This is my first time, and I've heard so much about it for so many years. It is indeed a privilege and an honor to be here via this scholarship. I would like to thank the donors of the scholarship for allowing me to do so. I also would like to thank the members of the scholarship committee. It was a joy and a learning experience, as every interview is, to interact with them via the telephone. I must give thanks and appreciation to the Illinois Council of the Blind. You all have supported me and believed in me, given me some self-confidence. Thank you all very much.
Congratulations, Christy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
The Duane Buckley Scholarship will be awarded to Lauren Helpert, and she'll be an entering freshman at Weatherford College, where she plans to major in architecture. Lauren moved, so it took us a little challenge to track her down, but we're sure glad she's here with us. Lauren.
I'd like to thank you so much for this scholarship. I'm known by many people by many names, but by some, the walking miracle. I was in a car accident which caused my vision impairment, where I flipped a Volkswagen Beetle 8 times and was dead upon arrival. The doctors gave me no chance to live, and since I am here and walking, I am known by many blessings. And here's another one. Thank you.
The first of the Ross N. and Patricia Pangier Foundation for the Blind, for Foundation of the Visually Impaired Scholarships, is awarded to Cammie Blurdman. I get her name wrong every time. She will be a junior majoring in the field of e-commerce and minoring in animal science. She'll be attending Northwestern Oklahoma State University in Alva. Cammie's a very ambitious young lady, and I called her to begin the interviews, and when I finally did manage to get through, she was out cleaning up from the second spin of the horrible tornadoes that hit Oklahoma City. Here's Cammie.
Well, since as a scholarship winner, I shouldn't say fixin', I'll say mornin', y'all, as we say in Okie land. I'd just like to thank the scholarship committee, Patty and Shelley, and everybody else who made this possible, because I'm just so happy to be here because it's my first convention. I'd like to thank Ross N. and Patricia Pangier Foundation for giving this to me, because I'm just so glad that I can be a part of their family, and I'd just like to thank everybody that's been so kind here and friendly, and I hope I can return. Thank you.
The second Pangier Scholarship is awarded to Matthew Furlighter. He's also an entering freshman this year. He will be majoring in accounting and attending Baruch College, which is in New York City. Here's Matthew Furlighter.
Good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here. I'd just like to say that I apologize if I echo some of the remarks that are already made this morning. It won't be because of the size of the room. First, I'd like to thank the ACB and members of the scholarship committee, as well as the Pangiers, the sponsors of the scholarship, for the tremendous opportunity that they have made available to me. Their generosity will certainly facilitate my journey through higher education. This is my first convention, as it was for many of the scholarship recipients, and I must say that when I arrived, I was more than just slightly nervous, But after seeing all of the help that is available, generated through the tireless efforts of many individuals, as well as the technology that is available, and after seeing the other successful and independent scholarship winners and convention goers, I'm inspired and encouraged. This scholarship and award will ensure that there are absolutely no barriers to success. And for that, I thank you all.
A fine group of students that we have this year. In closing, I would like to have your assistance in helping me thank some extremely important people. We have a hardworking committee, but they are far from the only ones. To begin with, I would like to thank Patricia, Barbara, and Phil for helping in the national office, especially Patricia. She was there oftentimes when we needed that little bit of extra help. She was there to lend a hand. And the other two individuals, James Olson and Terry Pacheco, are very important to me. We do a lot of interaction between each other and a lot of conversations. Terry doesn't even have to look up my phone numbers. I said phone numbers, you understand. I'm in different schools and different places, and she always seems to track me down. Please give a great round of applause to Jim and Terry. And this concludes our presentation for the 2003-2004 school year.
You know, I always think it can't get better, and it does. That's a hard-working committee that has to make really difficult decisions. They just keep right on. They're sort of like the Energizer bunnies, you know. Transitioning from education to employment. We all had to do it, and we did it in various ways. And it's a subject that surely needs to be discussed. We have a pilot program in Illinois now, and it's working beautifully. However, it's a pilot, and we don't got no money there. So we, you know, like many states right now, don't know what's going to happen to it. I'd like to introduce you now to Robert Carter, PhD from College Station, Texas, who's going to discuss this subject with us.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is an honor to be here with you this morning. And I was so excited when Patty a few minutes ago said there are some fine young people on the stage, because I thought she was talking about me. Then I realized, no, I've been active in ACB for the last 20 years, so she's really talking about these wonderful scholarship recipients. And could you all please just give them all a hand one more time? These are indeed the folks who are the future of ACB and the continuation of the work that has been started to really and truly give blind people and visually impaired people equal access to information, mobility, and everything else that we need access to in this country. And so I think it's a very exciting morning. I do realize that it's been a while that you've been here this morning. So the psychologist in me says, everybody, take a deep breath, and as you exhale, feel yourself relax and stay focused just for a few more minutes, and then we can all go have lunch. I originally titled this talk Bridging the Gap from student to Professional: Perspective of a Blind Psychologist. And this is really what I want to talk to you about today, is building this bridge. And because it is quite a complex bridge to cross, in my experience, to get from student to professional. And included in professional, I am also including folks who choose to stay home and raise families because there ain't no harder work than that anywhere. I was first a part of an ACB convention about 20 years ago, and I had the good fortune of getting to know some people like Paul Edwards and Gail Krause and Vicki Winslow, and I saw these people doing incredibly independent, progressive things, like navigating around these big hotels, for example. And I was very energized and excited by that, so I really understand what these scholarship people are talking about when they say that coming to an ACB convention is inspirational. It certainly was for me 20 years ago, and I began to realize at that point that maybe, just maybe, I could accomplish some of the dreams and goals that I had for myself in my life. I was a graduate student at that time working on a PhD at the University of Florida. And I began to realize, this was in the early 1980s, that we needed to develop a way of getting more blind people involved with computer technology. And I was fortunate enough to acquire a graduate assistantship where I set up a computer lab for the purpose of training folks who are blind to use the talking Apple II computer. Most of you probably weren't born when the Apple II came out, but nevertheless, it was an exciting breakthrough in technology at that time. But I began to realize that one of the problems with teaching people who are blind technology is that, in my opinion, we had to first take a step back and help people learn to feel a sense of self-efficacy. It's a term we use in psychology, which really means to feel a sense of self-worth, a sense of self-confidence, a belief in oneself. I worked with a gentleman at that time at the University of Florida who was actually a professor there who was blind. And he was a brilliant mathematician, but he did not know how to dial a telephone. He did not know how to access the very basic information that he needed to get himself from one place to another. And I began to realize that what we needed to do was integrate blindness into our lives and not make it something that is such an obstacle or a deterrent to the things that we want to do that we have to take a whole separate path from what we would have taken otherwise. So one of the things that I began to think a lot about and began to look at was how can we begin to teach ourselves and teach other people to develop some confidence and some belief in ourselves that we really can accomplish the things that we want to accomplish. And I began to think about to people about the importance of identity as a blind person, in particular as a blind professional. And I started thinking that there are some tools and skills that we all need to think about and focus on, in my opinion, as we attempt to make this transition from perhaps an educational environment or a home environment to a vocational, professional, or adult environment, if you will. And one of the things that I began to think about was that we have a definite need to be able to, today we call it multitask, or to do multiple activities at once. For example, as I'm speaking to you now, I'm thinking about what I want to say. I'm reading some outline notes off of my Braille note. I'm keeping my foot on the leash of my guide dog to make sure that he doesn't get up and walk away. And I'm aware of keeping track of the time so that I don't ramble on too long. That's multitasking. And that's what I and you and all of us have to do each and every day just to simply get through our day, to simply get to the places where we need to go and to do the things that we need to do. And it's complicated. I sort of disagree with whoever the person was who said blindness is nothing more than an inconvenience. Blindness in reality is something that requires us to be prepared to be flexible, to be aware of our environment and what's going on around us, and to be adaptable. This morning I came across the skywalk and I got up to the elevators, and unfortunately one of them was not working and there was a huge line of people trying to get up to this floor. And I immediately said, well, why can't we take the stairs? And it turned out that we took the stairs, and I was going up there and I was thinking, okay, we're all going to get up there and there's going to be a fire emergency door and a big alarm's going to go off and the building's going to get evacuated. But in reality, we walked through the door and came right into this room. Perfect. So I'm convinced that we have to be willing and able to take appropriate risks and to be creative in getting the things done that we need to do. I believe that technology these days plays a critical role in preparing ourselves to transition into what we do after completing our education. It's very unfortunate to me and very sad to me that so many people who need the technology are unable to afford it. And I think that's something that we really need to seriously work on and address. And I'm very proud of what ACB is doing these days with involving corporations in our work and in offering funding and so forth. We've got to find a way to get this exciting and level the playing field type technology into the hands of the people who really need it. I don't imagine, and I suppose I would find a way if it wasn't available to me, but I can't imagine how I would do my job as a practicing psychologist at Texas A&M University without the technology. And I'm very fortunate to have it and very humbled that I have the tools that I need to do what I do. But I'm also very aware that not everyone does, and that it's very important that we find ways of making access to media, to information, to everything that people need to live in this complex world today. I see that as being a major thrust if we're going to successfully make the transition. We've got to keep current. I think it's really important for all of us to keep up with what's out there, with what's going on, what's happening with our legislation. Even when it's bad news, I think it's important for us to keep track of what's available to us, what opportunities are there. And one of the great resources for providing such information is ACB, with the Braille Forum and with the other resources and with the people that are working on various aspects of making life better for all of us. It's incumbent on all of us as we transition from being a student to being a professional to keep aware of what's there. And I think that in all honesty, one of the main things that I want to say today is to talk for a moment about personal responsibility. I am very grateful for my family and for my friends and for the people in ACB who have helped me along the way. But I know that when it all comes down to it, at least in my opinion, it's up to me whether or not I do the things that I need to do to make a successful transition. And I think some of the things that I need to do to make that transition are, when I finished my education and went on my first job interview, I spent quite a bit of time, the 2 or 3 days before going to the interview, mentally preparing myself. And the way that I did that was to sit down and think about, what are the questions that this employer is likely to ask me, and how will I respond to those questions? And sure enough, they wanted to know, how will you deal with the paperwork? I had a note-taking device with me, and I demonstrated on the spot how I would write down information, how I could then print that information out, or how I could provide myself and my employer access to the information to go into the charts and the files and the records that we keep. They wanted to know, how will you deal with the fact that as a blind psychologist, you will not be seeing the faces and the body language of the people that you work with? I spent some time explaining to them how I compensate for not having that visual information. I had thought of it ahead of time and had prepared myself to talk about it. And I think that's critically important because, unfortunately, we're still, and have been for at least the 47 years that I've been on this earth, trying to help people overcome their fears, their prejudices, and their stereotypes. And about blindness and about what we can and cannot do, and we have to really keep working at that, I think, one person, one employer at a time, until we get them all under control. And finally, I would just like to say to you all how important I think it is for all of us to take a role in mentoring and assisting those folks who are coming along in this organization and who are coming along in their education and in their careers. The people who did that for me don't necessarily even realize that they did that, but these people who are here receiving scholarships are paying attention to what we're doing and how we're going about it, and they're learning from us as they communicate with us and observe us doing the things that we do here at this convention. And it's a very important role, I think, that we all have to continue helping people walk along the path for success. And I'm very honored and very pleased to have had the chance to speak with you all this morning, and I hope everyone has a wonderful rest of the week, and thank you so very much.
Thank you, Dr. Carter. We certainly appreciated your remarks. Let me see first. Oh, those people, those representatives who have been chosen by your state and special interest affiliates to attend the scholarship reception, it is in the Washington Room at 6:30 tonight. You know, today is being sponsored by Bank of America, and it's really great that we're obtaining that kind of sponsorship. I can't applaud the National Office of the people that are doing this for us too much. Let's give them a hand. Banks that have gone into the talking ATMs really have done something for us, so please use them. In Chicago, it was Bank One. But I'm going to tell you, I grew up in a mildly accessible world. And to walk up to that ATM and put the card in and get my money and walk away, just like a grown-up, you know, it was a great feeling. And I just can't tell you, it just adds a kind of a completeness to our lives, as do all these things that are coming down the pike. Cynthia, are you here for announcements?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, come on down, or go to Mike.
JM at Mike 3.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a ton of announcements, so please bear with me. Number one, if your children are on the field trip, if you have signed your children into the YAC, the Youth Activity Center, you are to meet them in the Westin lobby at 12:15 today. Secondly, we're getting some lost and found items. We had a cell phone. Please don't come and tell me you have a Verizon cell phone. There's like 6 million of them in the country. So please come. Now, Teddy Joy Rimhill did a very, very smart thing. She lost her cell phone. I did have one. So Teddy went away, and she called it. I answered her cell phone, and I said, hello? And she goes, that's mine. Thank you, Teddy. So one of the things you need to do if you do lose a cell phone, come and tell us what the phone number is. Or do like Teddy, Joy, and call it. Okay. Any other lost and found items, please come to the table at room 306. The best to your ability identified. Same with now, it's going to be a little harder with tape recorders because those are real similar, but do the best you can and identify it. Maybe it had a scratch on the side or something. Third announcement, please do not put your cigarette butts out in the dog relief area. Some people are doing that. Number four, if you would like to reserve a banquet table, if you have a group of eight, we sit in. And these, I need to talk to you about the banquet just a little bit. The banquet will be in the Westin in Allegheny 1, 2, and 3 on the third floor. And it will, the Westin has done something a little different in terms of their banquet tables. They're not round, they're oval. And so you have a person at each end and then three on either side. And that way, you know, when we go to a banquet, you can't talk to the person across from you because they're like 6 miles away. So you'll be able to talk to the person across the table from you. What a unique idea. So don't be a little, I just wanted to give you a heads up about that. We have ovals of eight. Please make sure that you have a group of eight. And even if you just, it doesn't have to be a delegation, it could just be the Smith party of eight. You don't have to give us all eight names, but please make sure, because if you really have a table of two and you reserve a table of eight, that means that six people, you know, are going to be standing around trying to find a table on Friday. So please get together a group of eight and come to the desk outside room 306. Next. The people from Missouri, this is why they have so many in their delegation. They rented a bus and they came here. Well, that bus is going to be going shopping today from 3 to 5. If you want to get on it as a Missourian, you can get on that bus. If you want to go shopping but you're not from Missouri, they'll take $5 from you and let you get on the bus. Okay. If you're interested, you're at a call room 811 in the Westin, and that's Mr. Greg Hollis. Before I go through caucuses, I want to make sure that I have done everything else. The dine around will leave at 5:45 today from the Westin lobby. You can also sign up at 306. Ski for Light reception is at 5 p.m. today in 806 at the Westin. That's the Executive Director's Suite. Before I go into caucuses, the Convention Center has asked me to pass on a message to you. Many of you are using the exit doors in the back of this ballroom instead of going out the glass doors and going out the elevator or going through exhibits and down. You're deciding to use the exit doors, which have stairwell, and you have found a little secret passage to the Westin. What the Convention Center has asked is that those doors are for emergency only. Ladies and gentlemen, this building is not finished. It is maybe 75% finished, and some of people have been found in construction areas. People have been found in rooms where there's cranes and just all kinds of things going on. If you injure yourself, we will not find you until Birmingham. And we do roll call and you're not there. Please do not use the exit. And it says exit only. We might be putting some braille on there too. That'd be a good idea on the handle. That was Pat Biddy's suggestion. Thank you, Pat. And we'll do that. And please, this is from the Convention Center. I mean, they can't arrest you at the door, but you really, if you use that, you're using it at your own risk, and it's really dangerous, and a crane might come by and not even know that you're there because they're not expecting people walking around in those areas. Now I'm going to go to caucuses. Tuesday, Alabama, noon, 4:12. By the way, let me talk to you about how to get to the 400 rooms. If you're going to, there's a set of escalators across from 4, 13, 14, 15. There's a set of escalators. Use those. They take you directly to our 400, and then you just keep walking in that away from the ballroom area. So it's four. We have 408 to 415 minus 411. Okay, 411 right now is being used by the convention center. All right. Tuesday, Alabama, noon, 412. Tuesday, Wisconsin, 5 p.m., 412. Tuesday, Iowa, noon, 409. Wednesday, Texas, 4 p.m., 408. Wednesday, Nebraska, noon, 408. Wednesday, Georgia, 4 p.m., 412. And I do have one Thursday. I'll just give that since I have it. Is the Arkansas caucus Thursday, noon, 413. So those are the caucuses I have. Oh, and Madam Chair, I got three more announcements. This one is from Pat Beatty, Chair of the ACB Environmental Access Committee. She's in room 2228. She has also given her cell phone number, and I'll tell you why in a minute, as 703-623-9840. It says, come and learn what's happening in accessibility, to the built environment. This is happening Wednesday from 4 to 6 in room 308. And now, the long-awaited, where are those newspapers? We've had some Braille machine meltdowns. So here's, first of all, people have been asking about constitution and bylaws. We have a limited amount. Please, one representative per delegation, go to the table outside 306. And for right now, subscribers, oh, see, that's why you should have subscribed. Subscribers only. They have a list, so if you try to sneak in there, they're not going to let you. Subscribers only can go pick up their newspapers outside room 306. Madam Chair, that concludes my announcements.
Go, teacher.
Oh, I don't have your room yet, Oral, and I don't know how I'm going to. There is a reception in the Westin for the international speakers from 6 to 7:30. And right now, Oral, we're going to put that in Cambria.
Cambria room. Thank you, teacher.
You're welcome, student.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
This is Jimmy Rock, Nebraska. I wanted to make everybody aware that our Nebraska caucus, as in past years, is open to the smaller affiliates who would not normally caucus. So if you are an affiliate that has not too many people here and you don't want to hold your own caucus, come join us tomorrow at noon in whatever room number Cynthia mentioned. 408, Cynthia, was that correct?
Make sure that our caucus is...
Whatever.
I don't
anyway,
know.
Anyway, come join us.
Okay, that's pretty folks. What?
I'll let you go first.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Colorado's caucus was not announced. We're Wednesday from 7 to 8 in room 1523 in the Westin.
1523, 7 to 8, Wednesday night in the Westin.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
All
you.
All Colorados should come.
Well, Madam Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
The Kentucky caucus is supposed to be in room 410 tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Jeff Tom, California. It says that our caucus, that our breakfast would be in room 30. However, I suspect that room 30 is wrong. I believe that's 301. Is that not correct?
Can't prove it by me.
But that's what I've read elsewhere.
Then we'll go with 301.
So our breakfast tomorrow will be in 301, unless
301.
Announced to the contrary.
Anybody else want to talk about
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
It's your esteemed Illinois president to let you know that the Illinois caucus will be at 9:30 p.m. Thursday in the Lawrence Room of the Westin.
Madam
Chair. Just got
Chair.
That this morning.
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
This is Cynthia Towers, your convention coordinator.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, sometimes you slip in a little thing there and everybody kind of goes a little crazy. I was just trying to do Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I do apologize to Kentucky and Colorado. I did have them on my paper and did not do that as I came up. I was just trying to get in mostly Tuesday and Wednesday because of the situation with the newspaper not being out. Well, I also have Ski for Light reception 5 p.m. in the executive director's suite today.
Okay. As someone who has to go to those caucuses, I appreciate you're just doing Tuesday and Wednesday because there's no way I could remember all that for 2 or 3 days. Now, what is your pleasure? Do you want to do a couple door prizes at adjourn, or would you like to do some more business? What did he say? Well, you know, the house divided, that's what we seem to have here. How many people want to do door prizes? How many people want to do a little work? Well, I'd say door prizes has it 5. So, Gene Barton, are you here?
Nope. Bill Newland's here, though.
Oh, great.
Okay. First door prize we have here is a bear carved from a mountain tree. And that's donated by Colorado. Southern Colorado, actually. Chapter of ACB.
James Pico, Washington, D.C.
Is he here? Do you Washington, D.C. people know? Well, no. Is he in the room? Okay. Go on.
Carolyn Hathaway, Canton, Ohio. Gregory Scott, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Marianne Van Sickle, Bethesda, Maryland.
Madam Chair, be here.
Marjorie Donovan, Burlingame, California.
Now tell me Margie's not here.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
A while ago, James Pico was called from Washington, D.C.
Yes.
He would be in the exhibit hall assisting his wife, who is connected with the National Library Service.
So he's working,
so he's
really.
Technically working in that regard.
Then he certainly should have his prize, don't we think? Yes. So would somebody take responsibility for getting it to him? Huh?
Just Kevin, come over by mic number 4. I've got his name on top of the prize.
Okay, next we have a dreamsicle ornament. Doesn't say who it's donated by.
Of course.
So I guess we don't know. Yeah. Oh, by Marie Keene.
Who?
Edwin Juding, Glendale, Arizona.
Is Edwin here? Okay, one more time.
John Rempel, Regina, Saskatchewan. Rita Howells, East Alton, Illinois.
Oh, Rita, I wonder if she's here.
Diane Sharon, Island Pond, Utah.
Is Island Pond here?
Well. Jane Sheehan, Silver Spring, Maryland.
All right, Jane. She's working, right. Right. So will somebody take responsibility to get her prize to her? Okay.
Okay.
Oh, sure. We'll trust her husband.
All right. We have $25 from RSVA and a... what is this? Yeah, it's a travel mug. I'm sorry. No, it was my reading.
Celeste Lopez, Plainview, New York.
Is Celeste here? Yeah, she left. Again, please.
Kenneth Bodno, Braintree, Massachusetts.
Is he here? Good for him. Have to do one more or two more, Chris?
Sorry. It's okay. I'm just standing by the microphone. I'm probably using the way.
Do you you're gonna do some more or?
Okay.
Oh, just a second.
Oh.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Melanie Brunson. I didn't know if you were done, but I wanted to make one more announcement before you adjourn.
Go right ahead, and then if they want to do a couple more door prizes, fine, or we can adjourn.
Thank you. Go ahead, Melanie. Thank you. I just wanted to remind everybody that the deadline for resolutions is tonight at 10 o'clock. So if folks have resolutions that they want to submit, they need to see one of the committee members or bring them to Armstrong by 10 o'clock this evening. Thanks.
And they mean it, too. I've been on that committee.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you going to do a couple more door prizes?
Okay. Yeah, we have a couple more here.
Okay, we'll do two more.
All right. Box of Cirrus's candy and another travel mug from the Washington County, Western Pennsylvania chapter.
Brenda Smith, O'Fallon, Missouri.
Is Brenda here? Well. Draw again.
Kathy Gallagher, Alexandria, Virginia.
Well, she was here before, I know. Is she here now? Is Kathy here? One more time.
Timothy Shoaff, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania.
Is Tim here? Apparently not.
Kenneth Lovren, Chesapeake, Virginia.
I heard a kind of a noise from over there, so I guess he's here.
Okay, we have a travel or $25 and a travel mug from Alaska Independent Blind.
Richard Feltenberger, Erie, Pennsylvania.
Is Richard here? No. Okay. One more time.
Delavina Farron, Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Poplar Bluff.
I didn't hear any screech from the Missouri delegation, so I think she's probably not here.
Carol Taylor, Westboro, New York.
Come on, New York. Gee whiz, I used to come from there. She's not here.
Let's go to the Midwest. Carlos Taylor, Muncie, Indiana. Mark Riker, Silver Spring, Maryland.
Oh, well, now, I bet you he's here.
Stay in the same state. Russell Isaacson, Silver Springs, Maryland. John Good, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. John Gormley, Manhattan, Kansas. Okay. Winifred Downing, San Francisco, California.
Okay, Wynn is in the press room. Will somebody take the prize for her? I'm sure she'd be really glad to get it. I'm going to. I want to thank you all for your indulgence this morning. We got the job done one more time. And really, thanks to Bank of America, the Scholarship Committee, and everybody. We shall recess now until tomorrow morning at 8:30.
And that concludes our coverage. I should just say that during the presentation of a scholarship winner, we had a listener who recognized the name of one of the scholarship winners from school that they attended some 20 years ago. So the listener contacted the scholarship winner by phone at the hotel, said that they had heard her name on ACB radio, and now they're back in touch again after 20 years. Isn't that beautiful? Now, let's see what else we can tell you about. Looking at what's happening tomorrow, well, the officer of the day will be Ardis Bazin, the treasurer, and she'll give a report and then preside. Looking tomorrow at accessibility and the digital decade, Madeline Bryant McIntyre will give that presentation. She is the director of the Accessible Technology Group with Microsoft Corporation in Redmond, Washington. You may have heard of them. And then at 10 o'clock, you've got mail. Tom Rutkowski of America Online, Chantilly, Virginia. He's their accessibility person, and he'll be talking. After the break, NLS update and report on web magazine project. That is from Frank Kurtzilke, director, and J.H. Bryant, head production control section, NLS. Following that presentation, DVS. And we're looking at local advocacy with Mary Watkins from WGBH of Boston, Massachusetts. Following that presentation, we hear about the ACB store, Glowing Canes and More, from Chris Gray. Answer That Phone is the next presentation. We look at cell phone access with Paul Schroeder, Vice President, Governmental Relations with the American Foundation for the Blind. So very much a technology-focused day tomorrow, and I know there'll be a lot of interest in that. Just a final reminder that we are not able, for reasons of location, to bring you the Friends in Art Showcase this year. We apologize for that, but who knows, we may be able to find a way of bringing it to you after the fact. We'll see if we can work on that. In the meantime, though, that concludes our coverage of the American Council of the Blind's Convention, and we will be back live at 8 Eastern, 12 Universal Time, tomorrow, Wednesday. Bye-bye for now.